Hey, y'all, Rick Houston here, and I want to tell you about my new show, the Moonshine and Motorsports Racing Podcast. I've partnered up with the State of North Carolina Department of Natural and Cultural Resources to help uncover the history behind moonshining mountain boys, professional wheelmen, and the backwoods and city lights of the Tar Heel State. In the first episode, I sat down with Winston Kelly at the NASCAR Hall of Fame for a little behind-the-scenes gossip about Junior Johnson's engineering skills.
He's got two things in his hand, pipe wrench and channel lock pliers, and they weren't new. They had been around the block a time or two.
Wasn't the first deal they built, I bet.
No. The pliers had been red before, but paint had worn off.
And in the second episode, I talked to a professional hillbilly, a.k.a. Dr. Daniel Pierce of UNC Asheville, to find out the real history of moonshiners and their battles with the revenuers.
He wrote about one of his experiences of trying to chase down this bootlegger and this souped-up car, and he complained that the government gave him these piece of crap, cheapo cars, and that were really no match, but he thought he was doing pretty good, and then the guy just hits it and just takes off and practically disappeared. But then the guy makes a bootleg turn and comes back towards him. And it, as he said, it was a game of chicken, and I was the chicken. And so he ran off the road. And actually, he was the guy who caught Junior Johnson at his daddy's still when Junior got tangled up in a barbed wire fence.
So check out the Moonshine and Motorsports Racing Podcast, available on YouTube, DailyDownforce.com, and all of your favorite podcasting platforms. And be sure to check out my regular show on NASCAR history, the Scene Vault Podcast.
Hey there, NASCAR fans. Have you got your copy of the latest edition of NASCAR Pole Position Print Magazine? If not, there's no better time than now to subscribe at PolePositionMag.com. NASCAR Pole Position is the only print magazine covering NASCAR. Officially licensed by NASCAR, NASCAR Pole Position Magazine is published throughout the NASCAR season, and each edition is an instant collector's item, backed with great feature stories and photography. The magazine is even mailed to you in a poly bag for those who love to collect NASCAR memorabilia. At PolePositionMag.com, you can even find past issues available to purchase. Get your subscription to NASCAR Pole Position and get great NASCAR content delivered straight to your mailbox throughout the season. Learn more at PolePositionMag.com. That's PolePositionMag.com.
Live from Nashville, Tennessee, and from Houston, Texas, we're back. Welcome back, everyone, to the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. I'll make sure they're not muted. That would be a very unfortunate thing to just hear me monologuing all night. But man, we have a lot going into this season to discuss. There is tons of rule changes, retirement, silly season. Oh yeah, we got a race at the end of the week too. That's really big. But I think to start off, you know, this show is pretty well known for having a fan perspective, of having just those off the wall, crazy hot takes or opinions. So I figured let's just start off with that. And let's get it to the guy that is to that corner down there. The Houston guy, the lone man, the odd man out of this little bunch at the moment when it comes geographically, Eric Estep. Eric, what's your little hot take going in the year? And while we're at it, let's give you a little timer on this. You only get 1 minute to give me your hot take.
Well, I guess that's a good thing, because I actually don't really have a hot take. I'm like you said, I'm the lone Texas guy, but for some reason, my favorite driver growing up was born and bred in Wisconsin, literally the polar opposite end of the country. But I want to take this minute to talk about Matt Kenseth, making it into the NASCAR Hall of Fame on his first try. That was super cool. Just earlier this month, the ceremony was streamed on Peacock. Hopefully you guys got to see his like 10, 11 minute speech. And I wasn't there in person, unfortunately, but as a lifelong Matt Kenseth fan, getting to watch my guy, the dude I pulled for years, every month of the year, it was pretty special. I know you guys have all experienced it with Dale Earnhardt Jr. going into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago, but to see Matt Kenseth kind of get his first moment, I guess if that's my hot take, it's that Matt Kenseth never got the spotlight he truly deserved. He came in with Dale Jr. He went out with Dale Jr. And as great as Dale Jr. was, he took a lot of the spotlight, but it was pretty great to see Matt Kenseth go to the Hall of Fame. Darian, what's on your mind here as we begin this first episode?
Oh boy. I mean, February 1st has been full of a ton of news, NASCAR related and really just sports related in general. But the one that has gotten, gotten NASCAR fans such a gripe today, Joe Graff Jr. Oh boy. Joe Graff Jr. gets to make 5 starts in the Xfinity Series this season for Joe Gibbs Racing, everybody. This is a guy who has DNQ'd not only for Richard Childress Racing, but also colleague as well. Maybe the third time's a charm with one of the Megabuck competitive teams. Maybe we'll see how he performs, but unfortunately, just another case of paid drivers not having to perform well at all to get these rides and stuff. Hey, you know, money makes the world go round. Money talks in racing. But we'll see how it goes. We'll see if it's another case of a paid driver wasting a spot. He's a nice guy, though.
Wow, that was like almost to a T, to a minute. Nice job, Danny. You're up. What's your big hot take or big thoughts going into the year?
Well, side note, Eric, I am sorry that you talked about Dale Jr. Matt Kenseth. I'm sorry that they had Dale Jr. right up there on stage of him the entire time, as I saw. But my hot take, though, a guy that I saw when the first race I ever went to, this is his final season. Kevin Harvick is making it his last season. Our chat is big fans of Kevin Harvick, as you've known from the previous years. Huge supporters of Kevin Harvick. Just an absolute inspiration to the chat and ourselves. But I am going to say in this final season, it's going to be a little bit like it was in 2021, and he's going to go winless in his final season. That is my hot take for this year. Kevin Harvick is not going to go out as a winner this year.
Wow. That's a good one. That's a really good one. But, you know, at the same time, people thought probably last year it'd be a hot take to say that Truex would be winless. So
actually, and you know what's funny? Steve Letarte was the only guy to actually make the right prediction to start off the year. He predicted that he would not make – yeah, he last year, Eric, yeah.
Did he really? That.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And my upload about it, yeah, he did.
So – really quick, I just want to thank all 500 plus of you in here. Be sure to lick that like button.
And, we're not even 10 minutes in. That's crazy.
Yeah. And my hot take is one that I don't know if people are going to be too awful happy with, but I will explain why. My hot take is I think that North Wilkesboro is going to disappoint a lot of fans this year. And I say this not because I want it to. I am looking forward to it. I think I'm actually going to be pretty happy with the racing, if I do say so myself. But I look at how a very similar racing track to it was received last year with Richmond, and fans were not too happy about it. North Wilkesboro is not Bristol. It is not Martinsville. It's not Bowman Gray or the Coliseum. I think that fans are going to be so hyped up, and such a big deal is going to be made out of this. It's been 30 years, you know, give or take, since this track was raced in any series in NASCAR. And I think that fans are going to overblow it and then get upset when it is not the greatest race we have ever seen. I think I'll like it. I think it'll be a good race. I just think fans are going to go into it, you know, expecting the greatest race ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been certainly hyped up about as much as you possibly can hype up a race. I don't know how it's going to live up to those expectations. But, Jerry, you and I, we have tickets. We're going. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get to see either the beauty or the disaster. I don't think it's going to be a disaster. No, I just think, you know, worst case is it's Richmond, and Richmond's
fine. But also too, some of these younger fans, I don't think they haven't watched too many of these older races at North Wilkesboro. So if you watch any of those older races, you'll know how, you know, the race is going to be more than likely.
You know, I'm going to give the chat a little bit of a fun little thing. You know, we always do polls and stuff on my channel. Let's start with a quick poll. I'll ask them about North Wilkesboro while we go into our next topic. But I'm just going to ask, do you think North Wilkesboro is going to be, you know, really good, or do you think it'll disappoint? Like, how do you think North Wilkesboro will be?
I'm curious because I think our live chat is probably skews pretty young. If I had to guess, a lot of teens and 20-year-olds in the chat. Yeah. So I'll be curious. Like, a lot of them, none of them grew up, or very few of them, I should say, grew up right watching North Wilkesboro. They've just seen the replays, heard the lore, the stories. Like, I'll be curious to see if their perspective.
Well, so have we too. So we're sort of in the same boat as well.
They stopped racing there before, I think,
1996.
The only one born.
I was in diapers.
Well, while we have that poll up right now, let's jump on into the first real major, you know, I won't say topic, there's so many of them, but topics. And that is, we have a huge amount of rule changes this year. Most of them announced yesterday, but the big one, the huge one, is that stage cautions are gone at most road courses, I should say, not all road courses. The end of the stage will still award points, but they're going to keep the race green that way to promote more strategy and to not just basically hand wins or winning strategies to some people while others only get stage points and vice versa, all that. This is the only exception for this is at lower events and standalone events, or standalone events for lower series. Getting tongue tied here. So I want to ask you guys, and I'm going to start off here. Danny, going into this, how is this going to change road course racing in NASCAR?
It's going to bring the strategy back to it. If you guys recall, before we went to stages, we would just see so much more of these road course races come down to fuel mileage. And I think we're going to see a return to that. Yeah, we'd see some here and there, but I can just recall several Sonoma races under the stage format that would just be seemingly drawn out to ridiculous, like, you know, gaps. And used to, I would think it would be like that for the old way, but no, I feel like it got worse somehow with the stages, and ultimately it made those things way longer than it needed to be of how long it takes for, you know, to run a pace like there, unless there's an actual need for a caution. And, you know, at a road course, they can have local yellows. It doesn't need to be a true full course caution. I think for the timing wise, it's going to work out better for the sport that way too.
Yeah, timing wise, this is great because I'm going to look back at a few of the road course races from last year. Like just at a Circuit of the Americas, for example, the total race time was 3 hours and 20 minutes. Like road course racing is already long enough as it is, so it certainly makes sense to definitely cut back on all of these stage cautions for sure. But you know, this is too early to tell right now. But I think fans will love this type of racing so much that it'll eventually convince NASCAR, maybe within, you know, the next 2 to 3 seasons, perhaps, maybe. That's what I think personally, that, hey, we can do away with stage cautions at every track. We'll see how it goes on road courses, but I have a feeling once fans get, you know, once fans see the on-track product, once they see a major difference in the types of racing we see on the road courses, the strategy calls, and stuff, because finally with the stage cautions gone, we finally get that strategy aspect back again that we hadn't had it, you know, for a while, ever since the stages have been into NASCAR and stuff. So I like this. I think it's the first step in getting back to I guess older NASCAR, you know, without stages, you know, without vintage. All the cautions and stuff, you know, vintage, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I don't think, like, Jared, I know you love polls. I don't think you even need to put a poll out for this one. I think I know the chat is going to probably unanimously be in support of removing the stage cautions from road courses. I'm not convinced this is actually going to, like, change the wonky stage strategy all that much. Like, it'll change it a little. You won't have, you know, the leader, the guy who just dominated a stage, pit with 2 laps to go and forfeit the stage win to have a better track position. Like, you're not going to see that necessarily. But, like, at Sonoma in the past, you'd have some drivers employ a 3-stop strategy, some maybe a 2-stop strategy to try and make it to the end and go for the win. I think now you may see variations on that where some drivers who know they may not have race win pace are going to just try to nab those stage wins. They'll sort of space their pit stops out so that they can be ahead when the stage checkpoint arrives. And so I still think you'll get a little bit of that wonky strategy that'll be a little frustrating. But what I love about this, though, is that for the first time in a few years, I think a lot of these crew chiefs are going to have to dust off their calculators, Larry McReynolds style, and they are going to have, they're going to have a lot of, I don't know, real-time analysis to do. Hey, can we make it to the stage? Is it worth trying to make it to the stage? Should we pit early, set ourselves? Like, you know, there is still going to be, like, we can't even really call it stage racing now because there's no, you know, break. It's like checkpoint racing almost is what it is now. We should call them checkpoints, but I think it'll be interesting. I do think it's a move in the right direction, especially for road courses. I just still think we'll see some weird wonky strategies that aren't necessarily just fuel strategy the way we're used to.
Yeah, I think with a lot of it is that if somebody does run that strategy though and cautions don't fly the right way, I do think it'll add at least that little fold. And I think that was a big thing a lot of people thought was missing. I think myself included on that one. And that's where I'm at. You know, I'm very old school when it comes to stages, playoffs, stuff like that. So anything kind of given back in that respect, I am personally ecstatic about. But I think with it also giving points out still, you know, it's the best that both could want. And if it doesn't have to, you know, if it won't happen at every track, I think at least tracks that are heavy in strategy too, we talked about last year, like a Pocono, maybe a Michigan, Indianapolis, if the oval comes back, that would be, you know, preferable on all fronts. But I got to say, it's a great move that NASCAR has done. And it's, you know, I feel like we've talked about it a lot since we started doing this show, is that every year we've done it, NASCAR just generally, you know, there's steps back here or there, but generally makes better and better and better and better decisions when it comes to the racing, whether it's a car, whether it's procedurally, whether it's anything kind of in that realm. So for me, you know, it makes me excited going into the year knowing I can look forward to the road courses again for the entirety and hopefully not just a demolition derby.
And what makes this even better is that, you know, this isn't, you know, the old road course schedule with NASCAR where you only race on them, you know, 2-3 times a year. How many road courses do we have again? 7-8
7.
Yeah, so that's a pretty decent chunk of the schedule. That's almost a quarter of the schedule. So, I mean, that's pretty good. So, I don't know, like, I mean, I would feel a little different about it, you know, if we didn't have as many road course races, you know, because it's like, oh, well, we'll only see this on road courses, you know, 2 or 3 times. We won't see it a whole lot. But, you know, this could definitely, you know, play a major factor into, you know, how the playoffs could shake out too with this, you know, with all these new strategy calls and stuff. And again, I really think the fans are really going to love this type of racing we're going to see. And again, it feels great to finally watch a NASCAR race again, really for the first time since 2016, without having the mandatory cautions in, you know, some of the races this year. That'll be a nice change of pace again.
Jared, I love the new graphics package. We got the chat's noticing it as well. Morrow says that the new ticker is moist. I don't know if I like that assessment. It is blue, I guess. Kinda...
I didn't realize we had Charlie on here.
The ticker do be ticking, though. That's what Need for Speed said. I'm surprised it wasn't a praise Ty Dillon comment. Wasn't that? I think that's
his
what,
thing. That's his thing
last
thing.
Year.
I already saw a super chat that said that. So.
Oh, you guys are ahead of me.
So, actually, I did some research. So we have a total of 6 road courses, and then also you have the 1 Chicago street course. So basically 7 road course races, you know, road course / street course races. But that's a good enough chunk of the schedule to where I think this will definitely play a major difference with how fans want the racing to go. I think this is really going to benefit, you know, not only the strategy aspect, but the most importantly, the racing aspect.
Yeah, and you talk about playoffs. I mean, there are drivers like Austin Cindric, Chase Briscoe, AJ Allmendinger, who may be looking at the road courses as their one and only ticket into the playoffs. Well, so they're important races.
Interesting you mentioned playoffs, because another change that's been brought up is playoff eligibility, which, by the way, just aside really quick, I know that people are hearing me out of one ear. We'll work on that. We'll make it work. Long year ahead. But
new microphone sounds really crisp. The one ear that I'm getting sounds beautiful.
The one ear, yeah.
The one ear.
Well, you know, hopefully I can.
Well, to be fair, actually,
to remove
the facade, I actually hear you in both ears. So
yeah,
it must be,
yeah, me too.
Maybe it's an issue through OBS or whatever you're using. I'm not sure, but
yeah, I'm working on it.
We'll work on it.
We'll work on it. But yeah, playoff eligibility. That's what's coming up here. The playoffs have been edited a little bit again. No longer, no matter what the series, whether it's top 20 or top 30, there is no longer a top 20 or top 30 rule for playoff eligibility. As long as you attempt all the races and you get a win, you're in the playoffs unless there's more winners, which means, hypothetically, that somebody like a Cody Ware or Corey LaJoy, who's outside the top 30 in points, could get a win and make the playoffs.
I was about to say, why does this feel like it's a Corey LaJoy rule?
Yeah.
And is he the good old boy now? Like,
last season we had, you know, the whole fiasco with, you know, all the parody taking place, which, you know, we love.
Fiasco.
Yeah.
I can call it that.
Well, no. Like,
call it chaos.
Yeah. Chaos. No. But the fiasco part, basically, you know, like, towards the end of the regular season. Remember, you know, there was all these fans saying like, oh my gosh, you know, Ryan Blaney and Martin Truex Jr., they might miss the playoffs, yada, yada, yada. Then Austin Dillon takes over. And now I can't wait for what type of scenario we are going to get, you know, with this new eligibility rule. Because like you just said, Cody Ware could just win a super speedway race out of nowhere and just make the playoffs, you know, no matter where he's sitting in points. But you do have to attempt all the races, though. So, yeah. I am glad that that's there at least.
The way that NASCAR gives out waivers, though, like, I feel like
it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, the handout waivers so much that I feel like, you know, you don't have to really attempt them all if there's a loophole to be exploited or some kind of, like, reasoning given.
You know that the guys who are very, you know, performance, you know, who rely on the road courses and stuff and super speedways, they are going to use this rule to their advantage here. It's like, don't worry about it no more. You know?
Well, we got to focus on who does this really affect. So last year, the only drivers, I don't have the points pulled up, but Corey LaJoy was outside the top 30 in points. He almost won that Atlanta race. Cody Ware, I think, did BJ McLeod run all the races last year? I'm not sure if he did. I don't think he is this year.
I think he did.
But like Ty Dillon was inside the top 30. Even Harrison Burton, Todd Gillen were inside the top 30. So there's only a couple of drivers who this really affects. And let's be honest, the odds of Cody Ware winning a race, even Corey LaJoy winning a race, very, very slim. So, but I just hate this rule because do we need to make it even easier to make? There's got to be some sort of standard, right? I understand it would be huge if Rick Ware Racing made it into the top 16. They get a rain shortened win at Daytona a la Justin Haley a few years ago. I understand that's huge for a small team like that. But like the playoffs, making the playoffs is supposed to be an accomplishment reserved for teams and drivers who really earned it. You know,
it's supposed to be hard. It's supposed to be
hard. It's supposed to be hard. I don't like the idea that a 32nd place team can win a fog shortened race at Pocono and make the playoffs. I just like it's too easy. There's too many. I don't know. I just think it's dumb. I don't understand why they implemented it. It seems pointless.
Really quick to answer the earlier question, BJ McLeod made a total of 29 starts last year, only one top 10 finish. At least he got a
I'm actually impressed by that.
I remember he was ahead of Kyle Busch at the fall Martinsville race. Remember that?
Everybody was. I was ahead of Kyle Busch.
Yeah, we were all ahead of Kyle Busch. But it's just crazy that, you know, that type of, you know, driver and team, they can now make the playoffs, with just one fluke victory, I would love to see the playoffs once again become hard to make in NASCAR, but it's
they are hard. I just feel like there needs to be a standard. Like,
well, they're not as hard as they used to be.
Say Harrison Burton had won a race last year and made the playoffs despite being 29th in points. We would have all kind of rolled our eyes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, especially considering Blaney and Truex would have both been out at that point in place of Harrison. Like, you know, we would have rolled our eyes. Now imagine, very unlikely, imagine that's Cody Ware in the playoffs and Austin Cindric is out. Or Truex is out, or Harvick is out. Like, that's not right.
I'll go back a bit to what Darian was saying. And granted, last year is an outlier, I think, in this. But I think in the sense of making it, you know, more difficult to make the playoffs or not as easy, I think it's more, it should be framed as not as easy for top-tier guys to get in. Like, if you're Denny Hamlin and you start out the year bad and you're running, like, 20th in points with 8 or 9 races to go before the playoffs, I don't see how it's fair to be considered a championship contender, and we all know that you're going to be in no matter what since you got a win earlier in the year.
Remember the horrible start Christopher Bell had last year? Was below top 30 in points, and he was able to just, you know, get up there, back up there in no time, too.
And it feels like this rule was made so that anytime anyone is up there at Atlanta or Daytona or Talladega, Mike Joy or Rick Allen doesn't have to say, well, they're out of the top 30 now, so they can't make it, remember?
I think you're right. It is the Corey LaJoy rule, because that run at Atlanta where he almost nabbed the win, it was going to get real awkward if he wins that race and isn't locked in, at least not yet. Like, that would have gotten weird. That would have gotten awkward. So that's probably why the rules, it's a simplification, which, okay, I'm all for simplifying things.
But also too, NASCAR doesn't mind having that wild card driver either.
I know. They're just leaning so hard into the wild.
It makes for good ratings.
I'll put it like this. Looking at last year's standing. So this is the first three inside the top 30 or outside the top 30, excuse me. Kurt Busch is 30th, only made 20 starts, but then 31st and 32nd are both Corey LaJoy and Cody Ware, with both 36 and 35 starts made. So it's clear NASCAR wants that, you know, they want that wild card driver too, no matter where they are in points, whether it's, you know, 20th or 40th, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, the thing I liked about last year is I felt like all the playoff drivers, everyone who qualified, had a legit shot of making at least to the round of eight, maybe even at least making it to the championship. I mean, Chase Briscoe did not have a good average finish last year, at least going into the playoffs.
Nobody was expecting
his average finish
was
close to 20th when they started the playoffs, and he made it to the round of eight. So I like that last year, everyone who got in, I thought legitimately had a shot to make some noise. With this rule, now you're just begging for that once in a blue moon, that 32nd place car to get in and just waste their time, waste everyone's time. I don't know. We can move on.
Yeah, I mean, there's another big thing. And by the way, I think I know what the issue is, so I should be able to fix it. But another big change is another one having to do with the playoffs, in the sense, with the Hail Melon being banned, being enforced by a time penalty, no matter what the track that it is done at or attempted at again is. So yay or nay on the Hail Melon being being banned. And I want to kind of put it like this too. I've seen a lot of people comparing it to like the T-Rex car, or comparing it to back when they used to pull the rear fender out, or like right in front of the rear wheel, they used to pull it out for aero reasons, and why that's banned. So, you know, Danny, I want you to start us off on this one. Overall thoughts on the Hail Melon no longer being legal?
I think it makes sense. I mean, was it fun in a moment? Absolutely, it was. Did we all get to make a lot of cool content about it? Absolutely, we did. We cashed in. We all did. We're not going to deny that. But it was one of those things. It's like, yeah, after the high of it kind of wears off, you're like, yeah, we can't have this happening every year when we come to Martinsville now. So I think it was the right call on NASCAR's behalf. I mean, I think I talked to Ross about it at the NASCAR Awards, and I mean, I don't think he really intended on doing it again. I think he kind of knew it's only something you get away with one time, and you know, I think they made the right call here.
Yeah, I mean, it'll always be remembered as NASCAR's most viral moment of all time, one of the greatest moments in NASCAR history. But at the end of the day, safety is always going to be the number one priority. And technically, I mean, you know, it did obstruct, you know, sort of the safety of the race to an extent, because I mean, if he hits that little, you know, connecting gate, you know, that's, you know, where the haulers come in, I mean, you know, that could have been a much different story. Thankfully it wasn't, you know, you can look back on that moment so fondly now too, you know. But I mean, it was coming, you know, it was coming, whether you like the rule or hate the rule, you knew it was going to come eventually. But my only question with this is, my only main concern is, how does this affect the other tracks? Because yeah, you know, obviously, you know, never going to see it at, you know, Martinsville again, but what about Darlington on the final lap? You know, what about a move like, you know, like the one Kyle Larson made? Does that count as a sort of a Hail Melon move, you know? So it's like, now NASCAR sort of opened up that gray area. That's my only concern with that.
Yeah, I know. I wholeheartedly agree with that last point. I want to know how it's worded. I didn't see exactly. I know they obviously claimed it's a safety concern.
Because Anthony Alfredo, he even asked himself too earlier today on Twitter. That's why I was like mentioning that. Because I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. Good point.
Yeah, like what is the rule? You can't like drag the wall. Like you can touch the wall with your quarter panel and still gain a position. That can't be banned, right? Is it like if you're on the wall for more than 100 feet, like for more than 3 seconds? Like what is the actual rule? I don't. How is it worded? That I'd like to know. But I don't need to see what Chastain did again. Like it would, I think I said this afterwards, that the next person to do it will be significantly less cool than Chastain's. Like it'll never, Chastain's move cannot be topped. It can be imitated, but it will just come off as cheaper and more contrived. Like, oh, we've seen that before. We knew where you got that from. You knew where you, who inspired
real
you.
Real original.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't want to run the risk of half a dozen cars ripping the fence on the final corner at Martinsville. There's safety concerns.
And being, like, and being split open to, you know, like Mike Harmon back in 2002.
I mean, I don't, hopefully that wouldn't happen, but you just never know when you're completely out of control at a high rate of speed.
Yeah.
Imperfect racetrack. So I think it's the right call. And I just think this makes what Ross Chastain did even cooler. And I saw Justin Marks tweeted that Trackhouse is actually going to eat the cost and just keep that car preserved in its final Martinsville form. That move was never successfully done before. And now it will never be done again. Mm-hmm. One of a kind. I think that's a feather in Ross Chastain's cap for sure.
Yeah. And I got to say, I agree with that as well. I think at the time, I definitely was very anti-changing it, but I think that was simply just because it was such an amazing and cool moment. But, looking at the arguments people bring up, it's unavoidable that that's probably one of the most dangerous moves that was still legal that you could do in NASCAR. I hope that it's not turned into a giant judgment call. Like, we talked about the Larson one. In the Xfinity race where the guys like him and Gregs and all of them, they were having flat tires and I hope there's at least some nuance to the rule to be like, hey, we're not going to screw people over if it's an iffy kind of thing. But for blatant stuff like what Ross did, yeah, I completely get it.
I just have the feeling though that it wouldn't surprise me if this rule becomes NASCAR's, what is a catch rule? You know what I'm saying? Like stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like to where it's like, oh, well, we got to go back to the tape. We have to review this finish. He did touch the wall a little bit there.
I don't think it'll be done so often that it would be that. Like it's not that often.
But the few times it is done though, I feel like, obviously NASCAR had to put some type of rule in place to make sure it doesn't happen again, but. Don't overcomplicate this rule though, please.
But another, kind of moving from this, because I feel like, we've got a lot out of that. One big thing that's being changed as well this year is the protocols with lost wheels. So there's three different ways that NASCAR is kind of going about this. The first one is on pit road under yellow, you go to the rear of the field. If it's on pit road under the green, you get a pass-through penalty. And if you lose a tire on the racing surface, not on pit road, you get a two-lap penalty and a two-race suspension for two crew members, but not a crew chief. So, Eric, I want you to start. Is this a fair change for this protocol going into this year compared to what we had in 2022?
Yes and no. So for losing a tire on the racetrack, I think a two-lap penalty and a two-race suspension for two pit crew members is a good call. Because I think last year it was a four-race suspension for the crew chief and two crew members. That was, like, I understand it's a safety concern, but with the new lug nut, single locking lug, it was just, it's too easy of a mistake to make. And that seemed like an too big of a penalty. Now for having the tire fall off, people revving behind me, on pit road, that being just a tail end of the longest line penalty or a pass-through penalty, that seems too light in my opinion, because at least on the racetrack, there's a catch fence protecting the fans. On pit road, there's not. And not that there's a ton of fans on pit road, but there's a lot of officials, crew members, team representatives, sponsors. A car going 40, 50, 60 miles on pit road, not as fast as on the track, but they hit a tire that's loose, that thing's going to go flying. I think could still do some serious damage. So I think it should just be a two-race suspension, a two-lap penalty for whenever the tire falls off anywhere. I think they should just simplify it. So, I think they got it right for when it happens on the track. I think the pit road penalty is a little too light, in my opinion.
What do you think, Dan?
You're muted, bro. I guess you have a problem. Yeah, all right, he's still muted, but I'll go next. But I have to agree with Eric, too. I feel like, it's just, the whole, the light side of, the lighter side of the penalty is, in my opinion, the, when a tire is lost on pit road and stuff. I don't know. I feel like there needs to be a bigger penalty for that. But I feel like, you know, only a 2-race suspension for 2 crew members. I feel like that's a whole lot fairer, though, because what was the old penalty for 4-race suspension, something like that?
For like the crew chief too.
For the crew chief as well. So I feel like that's a lot fairer as far as that's concerned. But yeah, to Eric's earlier point too, it's like, I just don't want these teams to get lax and stuff, you know, to where it's like, oh, well, I mean, if we do lose a wheel, we'll only have, you know, this much of a penalty, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know,
because obviously they're not trying to lose a wheel, but it's just, yeah, the kind
but
of thing
if you're
where...
trying to gain a little bit of an edge on pit lane, then it's like, oh, do you want to tighten it as
did
much?
Did you notice that the number of wheels falling off went down last season as the
owner? Yeah, and
as teams started to catch
it,
they'd start to wave. They'd be like, "We'll stop."
Yeah, but also too, they didn't want to have that giant ass penalty neither.
Exactly.
Too. But now that you've sort of cut it in half to an extent, I mean, obviously in the race, a 2-lap penalty is awful. I mean, that basically means your race is more than likely finished. But then, you know, only a 2-race suspension for only 2 crew members. I mean, it's not 4, so it's not as much. So, I mean, like, are we going to see, you know, because of this rule change, are we now going to see like an uptick in loose wheels now all of a sudden, you know, or have they learned their lesson, you know, from last year?
I want to give a shout out. I was reading the chat, but I also just saw on Twitter, Doug Rice of PRN said he's tuning in, watching, enjoying the show.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Hey. Oh, wow.
Hey,
grew
Mr.
up
Rice.
Listening to you in the grandstands at Texas Motor Speedway. So great to have you watching the show tonight. Yeah, and appreciate everyone tuning in. I look down, we're at 666 live viewers.
Mm-hmm. I've seen Doug several times at races. I haven't had a chance to introduce myself, but I have to in the future now.
Danny's wanting to call in mode right now.
Yeah,
all sorts of technical issues.
I'll be honest with you guys. I don't know what's happened to this microphone. Like, it just like short circuit or something. So I have to go to a different audio setting. I apologize for that.
It's all good.
It's the first stream of the year. It's a preseason stream.
Bear with us. At least we're streaming. Last year, they couldn't stream down in the middle of nowhere, Florida.
Last year, we were in the swamp house.
And it smelled so, it was so bad, y'all.
And Blemmon, if you're watching, I really apologize if that was your first IRL stream experience with us. But thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Sorry, Jared, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's all good. I mean, you guys kind of covered the way that I think with it. I think just, you know, kind of moving forward, as long as it is set out from the start and it's not, you know, what bothered me more than anything about loose wheels last year was when it would be lost on the track or there'd be flats or just any of that happened that compounded it, and it would screw drivers over, you know, when it was something that was really just brand new to all of them. I mean, granted, they were able to practice. Yes, I get that. But it's just, as long as it's something like this, it's set out from the start, black and white, I don't see any real issue moving forward with this type of rule. There's only 2 other things really to cover when it came to any changes to the rules for this year. And these ones can kind of go, we can go kind of quick with these. The damaged vehicle policy and the oval wet weather packages. Two changes that will definitely affect, I think at some point, both of these rules will affect the playoffs and who gets in maybe points-wise. So with the DVP, it's been extended from 6 minutes to 7 minutes. And with the oval wet weather packages, there's going to be wet weather tires used on damp surfaces for select tracks. I believe those are like, you know, flatter, shorter tracks.
I can list the tracks
for you. Go for it.
So basically, the tracks include The Clash, Martinsville, New Hampshire, North Wilkesboro, Phoenix, Richmond, also IRP, and Milwaukee for this oval wet weather package.
So Bristol noticeably absent, just because I guess, and Dover as well, the higher bank tracks, you're not gonna make it work.
Yeah, it makes sense because you have to be going like, you know, a certain amount of speed to stay on the banking. I mean, with these flatter surfaces, it makes a lot of sense.
And then as we learned in last year dirt race, they can handle a little bit of water on a track, but not too much.
Not like Watkins Glen.
Physics.
So I want to pose this question here. With the damaged vehicle policy being moved to 7 minutes instead of 6, Is that enough, or should they have kept the move they had in place from the playoffs last year and kept it at 10 instead and just had that be the flat policy throughout the season?
I'd rather have kept it at just 10 because it seemed to have worked for everybody. I mean, I'm old school. I wish they would just go in the garage. If you need to take the whole race to fix it, whatever. If you come out like over 300 something laps down, I personally don't care. But I mean, obviously NASCAR doesn't want that anymore. So I would have preferred them just to stay with the 10-minute damage vehicle policy. But hey, you know, seven's more more time than six, I guess. So it's better than 6 minutes. But yeah. I would prefer 10 minutes more.
I agree with you, Darian. The one thing I will say that I'm looking forward to is what I read is that the reason it's 7 minutes now is because NASCAR found that it takes about 6.5 minutes to replace a tow link, which we saw come up many times last year. So I am sort of looking forward to the teams being like, okay, we broke a tow link. Get ready. We got 7 minutes. We got to make the most of every second to fix that, get that replaced. So that element of competition will be interesting. But yeah, in my perfect world, like you said, Darian, I'd rather them just do away with it.
Yeah.
Go to the garage if you want to.
I miss seeing those messed up cars on track, just way off the pace, man. I miss those.
Yeah.
Well, just thank our good friends at Lionel Racing. They just made a lot of money here recently on a Dale Jr. car that was all like destroyed and all broke up. Can't have that anymore.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, and I put a poll up, and it's far and away 10 minutes is winning. I didn't put none because I figured that would win, but apparently just the highest one possible would.
Yeah.
But I will say this, like, the problem I have with 7 with the whole toe link one is that it still counts the pit road time, correct? It doesn't count when they get in the box. It counts when they get on pit road. That's the penalty.
That's a difference.
So it's like, are you telling me where a lot of these would happen, which are probably bigger racetracks, you're telling me they're going to get through pit road, like, to the stall, stopped, crew over, finished up, car down, out of pit road. You're telling me that that extra 30 seconds will be enough to get past a Michigan pit road, a Talladega, a Daytona.
Indianapolis
is done. You're done.
That was the first thing I thought about. I'm like, you're not getting your car repaired in time.
I feel like, and then if 10 is a playoff rule or something like that, I feel like leaving it at 10, if you're going to have it at all, is the right option.
Yeah, I
agree.
That's what I would do too. I think it just makes sense if it's 10.
Well, that's
a lot of rules changes.
Yeah.
Was that everything? Was that all the rules changes?
We didn't talk about the Riley Herbst rule, the little orange box or whatever that's been added. We can just skip past that.
Yeah, I think
we're
good going
past.
We're
every rule after different drivers.
Yeah.
Corey LaJoy rule.
The Ross Chastain.
Hey, dude, your driver was the one that started that trend.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Well, proud. Let's go on to the next big order of business that has been talked about a ton this offseason, and that is that Kevin Harvick is retiring. Kevin Harvick will retire at the end of the season. Yes, our chat, which are enormous, enormous Kevin Harvick fans, will love.
Huge fans. Huge.
So huge. I'm gonna pass this over to you, Darian, to start off with. With Kevin Harvick retiring, how is he going to perform this season? It's his last year. Is he extra motivated? Like, how does 2023 forecast for the four team?
You know, statistically speaking, you know, drivers, the way they perform in their swan song seasons would suggest that Harvick may be in for a rough season just based off of history. I mean, look back at, you know, Darrell Waltrip, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Tony Stewart. I mean, Matt Kenseth, he was all right. I mean, but he was certainly on the
downward
trend.
He was bad in the 42. He was good in the 20. Bad in the 42.
Oh, I was just talking about the 20. We don't even talk about the 42. We don't even talk about the 42 no more.
I like
that,
Darian.
That don't count.
Agree.
We don't talk about 2020 at all.
Yeah, but basically, you know, you look back on, you know, a lot of these drivers' final seasons. I mean, really, Rusty Wallace and Jeff Gordon are really the only two drivers that come to mind where it's like, oh, in their final years, they were really performing up to par, you know? Like,
and didn't Rusty say later he wished he'd kept going?
Yeah, and Rusty wishes he didn't even retire neither. I mean,
he was good.
So, you know, Kevin Harvick, I feel like, you know, we'll see somewhere, you know, we'll see like a hybrid season somewhere in the middle of, you know, like,
you can't say hybrid to a NASCAR audience. They lose their mind.
That's right. But no, basically a hybrid season for Kevin Harvick to me would be somewhere along the lines of a mixture of his 2021 season and 2020. So, like, I feel like,
whoa, 2020, he won 9 races.
Well, hold on, hybrid. That's what I'm saying, hybrid. So, you know, you have the best and the worst, right? Give me a second. So, I feel like, though, you know, when you put those two seasons together, I feel like I don't see him winning any races, but I do still see him performing, you know, well enough to at least still be in the playoff conversation. But with the new rule and stuff where, you know, it now doesn't matter where you are in points, you know, could we have another parity filled season and he misses it based on points? You know what I mean?
Hmm. You know, so that sounds a lot more like his 2021 season than his 2020 season. That's the only
but reason. I mean, he is going to come close to winning some races.
He's going to come really close to winning 9 races, yeah. But he's not going to get any of them.
Oh, wait, hold on. I'm sorry. No, my bad. 2021 and 2022 season. Oh,
yeah, it's like, that's odd.
I'm sorry. I looked at it wrong. I thought the zero was in the 2020. That's right. He won 9 races that year.
You're good. All
right, so 2021 to 2022. My bad.
Okay. I agree with that. So I wholeheartedly agree. I do think Harvick will make the playoffs.
You were right to call me out.
Well, I just wanted to just make that correction, but you're totally good. No, I think Harvick will make the playoffs, though. I think he'll win a race or two. You mentioned other drivers, you know, farewell tour seasons. Yeah, historically, they don't go great. Recently, Jimmy Johnson missed the playoffs in his final year. Dale Jr. missed the playoffs in his final year. Stewart was going to miss the playoffs until he, you know, knocked Hamlin out of the way. Hamlin kind of gave him that win at Sonoma. I don't know what he was doing. Mm-hmm. Jeff Gordon is the benchmark in recent history. He won a race late in the season, of course, and, you know, got some help from Kenseth, Reck, and Logano. But Jeff Gordon won a race and actually made it to the championship four in his final season. I don't think Harvick gets to Phoenix. I don't think he's in contention for a championship, but I expect him to win a race or two. I expect him to make the playoffs, at least the round of 12. I think he's going to have a very respectable season. I'm curious to see if Stuart Haas makes any gains. You bring Ryan Preece over. I know he's young, still relatively inexperienced in a cup car, but can he bring any information or maybe a new culture, some level of leadership that maybe Cole Custer wasn't? Can that improve SHR? Every manufacturer's changed the front ends. The body has changed for every single car. Does that even the playing field? Does that give Ford maybe a slight advantage even? That's what I'm curious. He's still working with Rodney Childers. They've even brought some new sponsorship over with Sonny D for a couple races. I think Harvick's going to go out solid. I don't think he's going to win the championship, but I think he's going to have a very solid year. It'll look a lot more like 2022 than 2021.
Yeah.
Well, looking
win 9 races.
Looking at what the chat thinks, I asked in a poll how many wins Harvick will have in 2023. 17% of them say he's going to go winless. Only 8% say 3+. 28% with 2, but almost the majority, 47%, so just under half, say that he's only getting 1 win this season, which is about, well, that was 48%, which is about on brand for how he was performing last year. What I want to ask now is another question, and if everything is going all right with Danny, I want to see what he thinks about what the legacy of Happy is going to be.
The legacy of Kevin Harvick will be one that was uniquely his own. Yeah, he was forced into an unpredictable circumstance of having to replace the Intimidator, but he made it his own. Went out and won a Daytona 500, the 07 500. He won a championship in 2014. All of this coming in his days as a Chevy driver. The Ford years had its ups and it had its downs for sure. But in the end, he was a key part of this generation of drivers and this generation of fans, and by all means, a Hall of Fame driver one day.
Absolutely. I pulled it up just to double check, but he is currently tied for 9th on the all-time Cup Series win list with Kyle Busch, interestingly enough. 60 wins. There are not a lot of drivers who can say they came anywhere close to that mark. And to echo what you said, Danny, obviously entered the Cup Series under tumultuous circumstances. I think handled it as well as any young driver could. Winning just a couple weeks later at Atlanta was just a huge, I think for many people, was a healing moment for the sport. Got some weight off of his shoulders. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of what ifs with Kevin Harvick's career. No disrespect to Richard Childress or his time in the 29, but to see how he flipped a switch seemingly when he got to Stuart Haas in 2014, the second half of his career, like what if he'd been in that type of equipment for his entire career? Could he have gone toe-to-toe with Jimmy Johnson? I'm not saying he would have won 7 titles, but I think he'd have more than one, safe to say. I'm shocked he only has one, to be honest. He's been to the championship four like five times. Law of averages says he should probably have a second one by now. But I can't help but think about that. Kevin Harvick, first ballot Hall of Famer, all-time great. He's done things in the past I didn't love. He got into it with Matt Kenseth in a Busch race back in like 2002, 2003, I think.
2002.
Didn't love what happened at Talladega in 2015 when he wrecked Trevor Bayne to save his playoff spot. Like there are warts involved in Kevin Harvick's career, but too many highs to ignore. All-time great race car driver, and he's going to be around for a long time. Just helped, you know, was part of the team that bought the Cars Tour. Kevin Harvick Incorporated manages several Top Cup and Xfinity drivers. His son Keelan, his racing career seems to be taking off. He's got a daughter who it sounds like is interested in racing. So Kevin Harvick will be around for many years to come, especially when he steps into that Fox booth next year.
Well, Kevin Harvick's legacy to me, he aged like fine wine. He came along later on, much later on in his NASCAR Cup Series career, but also too, I mean, you have to look at his other stats in Xfinity and trucks as well. I mean, yeah, I mean, sure, you know, you want to bring up, you know, 60 career Cup Series victories. Don't forget 47 career Xfinity Series victories. And let's not forget his stranglehold on the 2006 season, one of the most dominating seasons in all of that series history. And of course, in the truck series, he ran his own team for a very long time, also won a total of 14 career NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series races. Oh, it feels so good to say Craftsman again. But all in all, when you combine all those, I mean, obviously, well over 100 victories across all three series. Actually, I want to do some quick math. I believe that is 121 victories across all three series. 60 plus 47 plus 14, right? Is that 121? I think it is. I'll have to look it up again. It is? Yes.
Yep.
Let Mac did it all in my head. Did it all in my head, bro. I swear, I did all.
Third grade math teacher is proud.
Thank you.
Damn, you didn't have to diss him.
Sorry, Darren. Very good.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Hoffmeyer.
Hey, it's hard to do math in front of 700 people. Like that's
pressure. Yeah. Remember, I got to do all the scrolling and stuff. But obviously, he was a guy who replaced a another driver with a much bigger legacy. Obviously, had a the way of the the weight of the world on his shoulders, and was still able to persevere and create his own legacy. I mean, Eric had mentioned it, when he was talking about him. I mean, obviously that'll be one of the major what ifs, of course. What if he started his, career instead of with like a Hendrick Motorsport or, another team like that. But also, I mean, you could also make the case, maybe he might've squandered those opportunities because he was a hothead in these days. And especially in those early days, hey, you never know, it was sort of, sort of like Kyle Busch was in his early days as well. But then obviously he persevered, matured as the years went along. And as soon as he joined Stuart Haas, his career just skyrocketed, man, just elevated to a first ballot Hall of Fame career. Because before joining that, I mean, I don't know, you couldn't really make the case for Kevin Harvick being the first ballot Hall of Famer, in my opinion, before that. But obviously, fast forward all these years later, he's about to enter his swan song season, finishing his career. By the end of the season, he'll have over 800 starts and will at least have 60 victories and a Cup Series championship. The only thing, though, I wish he would have won multiple championships. That's the only thing, too, I feel like. It's like you make the final four, so many times, like Eric just mentioned. You're expected to win at least one more. But, with how chaotic this playoff system can be sometimes, maybe it's not a crutch in some fans' minds, but yeah.
Where I see Harvick's legacy, in my opinion, and maybe this is me as a jaded Dale Jr. fan, he's like, even if the stats don't show it, just because of how flashy he was, it feels like he is like the most clutch driver in at least the last 25 years. I mean, he didn't get the closer for no reason. If you just, I think that name really started to stick when he beat Mark Martin for the 500. But as a jaded Dale Jr. fan, over and over and over again, watching him beat my driver, especially twice in 2011 at the last lap or laps, it is etched into my brain that if Kevin Harvick is second, no matter how far back, he will find a way to win. And for me, that's at least how I'm remembering Kevin Harvick. Like, Harvick is that guy who can run third with two to go, pass Kyle Busch, and then push Jimmy Johnson 10 miles an hour faster into a corner and beat him at his height. So that's how I'm going to remember Kevin Harvick, because, I mean, some of the most flashy, interesting, fun wins in NASCAR history, came from Kevin Harvick having to come back right at the last second.
I'll remember Kevin Harvick as the guy who simply did not give a bleep what you thought about him or anybody for that matter. Just did his own thing, man, and it worked out. It's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
He still doesn't. He'll just always tell it how it is.
Yeah.
Now, moving on from that, we're going to go to one last story before we get to our first Super Chat stage break and the first of many this year of the Lightning Round. And we'll be brief on this because there's pretty much no big news coming out yet. It's something that we're going to have to watch through the season, and that is the TV rights and basically the future of NASCAR and how we're going to watch it in the next couple of years. So at the moment, looking most likely to come back is Fox and NBC. They also get the first dibs on the negotiation, which I think has already started and then ends in March, though they're probably not going to get a deal done by then. ESPN has shown interest, and they have a lot of racing on their networks now with F1 and the newly acquired SRX on Thursday nights. Interestingly enough, is out of NASCAR's way now, which I'm sure NASCAR is definitely a bit happier about. But then also Amazon has jumped in as a streaming option, possibly. So that might throw a bit of a wild card in there. Now, the teams are a bit more positive than they were at the end of last year, especially since there were drivers throwing stuff out into the public. But, you know, the RTA has talked about having an off-season exhibition series, talking about $16 to $18 million per car, so more money is wanted from this, and making the charter system permanent in all of this as well. So, I guess moving into it, and Danny, I'll start with you on this. Moving into the year, when it comes to, you know, basically figuring out after 2024 what's going to happen, who do you think they're going to go with, I think, is the big question, as well as what changes to the sport, whether it's on the screen, behind the scenes, whatever it might be that we would be interested in, could there be?
I don't necessarily know if ESPN is going to join. I can tell you this, though, for one of my more recent videos where I talked about NASCAR and ESPN's history, a lot of fans do not seem to want them to come back, ultimately because of the way that they've looked at and treated NASCAR in recent years, and that's to be understood. I don't know if NBC wants it in the long run, though. There have been mixed reports that, you know, they're, you know, ultimately dropping to NBC Sports Network and going to USA, you know, had a lot to do with, you know, what happens with their NASCAR coverage moving forward. And I wouldn't be surprised if they go away. And I also wouldn't be surprised if ESPN does do it. I don't necessarily know if they will. I think Fox ultimately, though, will stick around, but that's my thoughts.
I do think Fox and NBC are the front runners. I'll be curious to see what happens with streaming. Amazon's got a lot of money they can throw around, but I think NASCAR ultimately is going to steer more towards the traditional networks, just because, you know, being on big Fox, being on big NBC, NASCAR still has an older fan base. Most of their viewership is going to tune into those traditional channels, and the teams, when they sell sponsorship, you know, if the ratings go from 3 or 4 million viewers per race to 800,000 because it's on Peacock, the teams won't be happy because now sponsors will not be paying them nearly as much money. So there's a lot of give and take. I think NASCAR is going to lean towards Fox and NBC, but there's two different debates happening simultaneously. There's the negotiations with potential media companies about a new TV deal, but meanwhile, NASCAR is working with the teams, as you were mentioning, Jarrett, to determine how the next media deal will be split. The teams want basically double as much money as they've been getting the last 10 years. And NASCAR sounds like they may be willing to cave a little bit, give them close to what they want in exchange for, you know, maybe a spending cap, promises that they're not going to spend absurd amounts of money in the future. Like there's a lot of moving parts. It sounds like over the past few weeks, I think this was Sports Business Journal, Adam Stern, John Uran writing about it. It sounds like things have progressed a little bit. And maybe in the next few weeks, few months, we'll start to see some serious headway. But right now, I think it's just still early in the process. I think one of the reports I read, it might've been Sports Business Journal, was that it's unlikely a TV deal gets reached until like maybe September or October of this year. So it's going to go on for months.
Yeah, well, that's certainly be a while.
Yeah, that's about how it worked in like the current deal is, you know, maybe it's a year past, I would say, compared to how that one was worked out. But they had that deal worked out by late 2012, early 2013. So, you know, and that deal ended, the previous deal had ended in 2014. So I wouldn't be surprised if it takes that long. Which, Darian, you wanted to give kind of your thoughts. I want to tee you off with this really quick. I have asked in the chat what they want, and they said who do you want NASCAR to go with for their new TV rights? 40% say Fox, NBC, and Amazon, all three. 39% leave Amazon out but have those two. No, it's a tie between them now, back and forth. Wow. And 11% say NBC, ESPN, and 9% say Fox, ESPN.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me that, you know, those two are sort of neck and neck. I mean, like, obviously Fox and NBC, they've been covering NASCAR for quite some time, you know, especially Fox. And Fox, they've even said publicly, like, look, like, we really want NASCAR back. I mean, it, you know, fills us, you know, gives us, you know, a lot of sports content, you know, during the NFL off season, you know, that sort of thing, during the spring, you know, during the summer, you know, that sort of stuff. And obviously they covered the entire Truck Series season for the entire season. So, but as far as NBC, yeah, I mean, I would love to have them back as well. I feel like they've been the gold standard for quite some time when it comes to NASCAR broadcasting. Not perfect, but, you know, compared to Fox, I'll certainly take them over that. Now, I do see, I do understand some people feeling some type of way about, oh, Amazon's coming in, blah, blah, blah. Oh, we might have to, you know, have some races behind the paywall. I'm going to be honest, that's just the way that some of these other sports are going. I mean, just look at the NFL. They were, you know, had their Thursday night football games on Amazon Prime, and they shattered, you know, expectations. So
there's been a percentage of fans calling for their, like, unknown NASCAR network, even, like,
yeah, you know, but then that's sort of risky. I mean, because when you take a look at other, you know, like WWE, for example, they had their own network for a while and, you know, sort of shut down or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I would love, I mean, a perfect case scenario in my opinion would be a deal where you bring back Fox and NBC, so at least the fan base will have that sort of familiarity with its broadcast partners, so we don't have to go through this whole transition period, you know, compared to other TV deals. And at the same time, you know, sort of usher in the new era of streaming and somehow ink a deal with Amazon Prime somehow. I don't know how, you know, I mean, the NFL did it with its other TV partners. So I'm sure, you know, NASCAR sort of works up and out.
So here's something that when I was looking back, because, you know, I'm a nerd for some of this kind of stuff. And one thing that I noticed looking back was that, you know, pre-2001, it was the tracks working out the deal, so there was no consistency whatsoever. Then 01 to 06, it was consistent with Fox as well as NBC Turner Broadcasting. You had Fox, Turner, and ESPN, and then what you have now with Fox NBC. If what the reports at the moment, the likelihood, and it has for a couple months pointed to Fox and NBC renewing. And now, again, it depends on if they put many on Peacock versus if they leave it NBC USA. I mean, other series like IndyCar and IMSA are getting more NBC races than NASCAR. And that's just, I think that's just a result of an outdated contract. So there might be even more on Big Fox and Big NBC since cable is becoming obsolete even compared to broadcast television anymore. What I'm getting at with this is, for the first time ever, if this deal is signed with just those two, it'll be the first time that NASCAR has had all the networks, whether two or three, be continuous from one contract to the next. And if it is 8 or, like being estimated, 10 years, it means that NASCAR will have 20 years of stability while they've reached that bottom out and are starting to build up their fan base again. So the fact that that could happen is huge, I think, for the future of the sport. And I think that it's something a lot of fans may be overlooking going into it. I mean, I would not have thought leaving 2014 that the next time a possible change in broadcasters could come would be 2035. I mean, when you put it in those terms, it's pretty crazy to think about.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
That's good that NASCAR at least has that going for them. You know, I know some of the fans, I mean, they were, you know, like, oh, we want a, you know, brand new television partner. But, you know, you just brought up that, you know, that whole, you know, consistency factor too. I mean, that's at least a good thing for NASCAR, you know, to have the same television partners for 20 plus years. I'm not sure. I mean, especially nowadays, like, you know, a whole lot of sports, you know, like, can't really say that nowadays, I don't think.
It's just tough. They're going to have to balance the modern streaming and future streaming audience versus the existing cable and network TV audience. It's just tricky because I don't know many people my age who pay for cable, who get USA and Fox Sports One.
Yeah.
But they might be willing to pay $5-$10 a month for Peacock so they can watch The Office and maybe check out that NASCAR thing once a week. Like, it's tricky. It is tricky because you don't want to put everything on streaming right away. That'll destroy your base.
Especially with a fan base like NASCAR.
You got to gradually phase it in. That has to be working. If it's 2030 and we're still only on USA and NBC, I feel like something will have gone wrong. That's
now. I want to ask each of y'all this. Now, if the deal with Amazon were to be worked out, how do you think it would go? Like, how do you think the deal would go? Do you think like they would do like maybe like all something like maybe 3 to 6 Cup Series races, you know, a season?
I think the only way is if you work with Fox and NBC aren't going to give up their dates with it. The only way I can think it works is if you get a deal worked out with them. Because, I mean, if you look at the way that the NFL did it with Amazon, that was like revolutionary. No other sport has even come close to that. The way I would think is that NBC and Fox, you know, can work out a deal, and maybe, you know, they get the television, the commercials. Amazon could get a pay to play commercial free, and maybe have just NASCAR's own people that may work for the company. Maybe that would work. I don't see how, because after Thursday Night Football started out better this year and ended out averaging 2 to 3 million less, so cut their audience like by about a third.
Thursday night football games kind of garbage this year, though? Do they?
Some of them were, yeah.
But so were some of the primetime, like Sunday night and Monday night ones, and those ones were up in ratings. So
because I
feel like where we're at with streaming in general, I think with a streaming war, you're going to lose out regardless on viewers. Because I'm not paying for, you know, as a NASCAR fan, I'm going to pay to get USA right now on FS1. Exactly. I'm paying, you know, give or take like $70 for YouTube TV to get all the sports stuff I want. I'm not going to spend a bunch of extra money if I don't have to. I'm lucky enough to have Amazon for free because my girlfriend's TV comes with it. But not everybody is.
Wonderful.
So that's where my worry with it is. I mean, if you want to look at it compared to cable, it honestly is a better option. I think 160 million have Amazon Prime compared to like 90 million have FS1, you know, 90 million have ESPN, 80 million have USA. So if you look at it like that, it might do better than the cable races. So maybe that might be the only way you can do it. I mean, if we're talking streaming to Peacock, though, or whatever Fox will use, though, I'm a no-go. Amazon's the only way I could be for streaming.
Because I would be very disappointed if a streaming deal is worked out, but then like that provider would be like either like Peacock or like Fox Sports Go. Like, I'd be very disappointed with that because I've used both of their, you know, both of their platforms, and
Peacock's buggy. It's really
Peacock's buggy. Very buggy. NBC Sports streaming app is very buggy as well. And then sometimes Fox Sports Go can be buggy. But I mean, Amazon, everybody's on there. Everybody's on Amazon. Everybody knows Amazon Prime. You know, everybody knows how well Thursday Night Football worked out there.
I could watch a NASCAR race and then watch the new episode of The Boys.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It would be interesting to
and then buy something with 2-day shipping.
Yeah,
there you go. It would be very interesting to me because you had mentioned like, oh, like who would be, you know, like would NASCAR have their own production team? I'd like to see them do that, you know, to have their own production team, help out with the whole Amazon Prime effort and stuff. And then, you know, NASCAR fans have been talking about for years, for a while now, look at Formula One's coverage, commercial free. I mean, they could do something similar on that on Amazon Prime. And I mean, I don't know how much it would be initially, you know, but I would certainly pay, you know, however it takes or whatever, how much it costs to watch that type of program.
I mean, it would definitely have to be something for hardcore fans. Darian, what do we got coming up here?
Yes, it's a new era indeed. Now, I said this on my stream last night. You know, obviously, we're still going to do the lightning round. No more peeking out the mic, however, though. No more peeking out the mic. Got too many complaints, and obviously...
Why'd you move it so close to you, then? You're just going to...
Because I like it there. It'll make sense. But yeah, you know, so basically, this new era of the lightning round of the NASCAR Weekly Podcast is going to be said with my radio voice. So let's get ready. And it's the lightning round on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. Jit, what do we have on tap for tonight?
Well, let's see. starting off with something that I actually had just been sent to me a little bit ago. Apparently, you know, there's supposed to be news on the IndyCar game tomorrow, but apparently there's news on the future overall by Friday of motorsport games and any properties with it. Mm-hmm. So for any NASCAR gaming fans or, you know, anyone else
who's
interested.
Those are still around?
Yes, apparently, yeah. I mean, they don't work.
They still exist.
But...
just haven't had much to celebrate in recent years, unfortunately.
Yeah, we got some pretty good Crash compilations, and if we're talking Crash, I mean crashing streams because of the game, but... anyway.
Crash, for sure.
Yeah, to some other NASCAR news here. Starting off with, it's going to be a weird year for one big reason. The 18 car is, well, it's still there, but the 18 number is gone. It's going to be the 54 car for Ty Gibbs.
That's going to take some getting used to. Not seeing the 18. Because, yep. Dude, when Joe Gibbs Racing first entered NASCAR, first car, the 18.
Yeah, there's crazy. That. It's like, it's weird because the 18 is a Joe Gibbs number. The 54 was originally a Kyle Busch number. But yeah. Like somehow over the course of history, the 54 became less of a Kyle Busch thing. And the 18 became Busch's brand.
So Joe Gibbs said, not only are you not going to get your ride back, Kyle Busch, we're going to take your old number too. Your 54, the number you made famous.
Well, other than that, there's still some other big stuff. Starting off with is NASCAR is looking at launching an international series in Brazil as a sprint racing series, like just short races, that it will eventually race on oval tracks.
Yeah, that was big news. That's very interesting.
Very interesting
and
indeed.
I can say that there is actually a relatively big segment of fans that listen to this show and watch that are from Brazil. I was
digging through my YouTube analytics the other day. Brazil was like the fourth most like of all the countries that watch my videos, Brazil was like number four. I was very surprised.
Dude, they're whether it's NASCAR, F1, IndyCar, they love their racing in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty big there compared to other countries. Another big news for fans in the South, not as South as Brazil, but the South, is that Rockingham has been repaved and they are actively working to try and get NASCAR back in any form whatsoever. Also, looking at some of the lineups, Darian talked about it a little bit earlier, but the other ones for the Xfinity series for JGR will be Ryan Truex for six races in the 19. It's going to be really interesting to compare the drivers in the 19 stats to each other.
I can't wait.
Gee, I wonder why.
Sammy Smith in the 18 full time, which I'm big on Sammy Smith. I think he's going to be pretty good. And then John Hunter Nemechek full time in the 20. The 20 is now back in the Xfinity series.
There was a lot of talk about, you know, a lot of rumors, especially, you know, with Kyle Busch leaving last year, like, oh, he might be the replacement. But hey, this is the next best opportunity. So.
Some other stuff that's been kind of thrown around and tested is mufflers. Hopefully that we didn't just lose half our audience from the word being muttered. But there are mufflers being tested at Phoenix. They're for the Clash and the Chicago Street Course and possibly, if it works out, the Nashville Fairgrounds.
Yeah, if you listened to any of those or watched any of the clips from that test last week, it doesn't sound that different. I think some said maybe it sounds a little deeper, like the tone of the cars.
Yes.
But, you know, it will make a difference, especially in those urban areas and especially at Nashville Fairgrounds where we've talked about it. The locals, I think they're going to need some sort of mufflage.
It's too loud. It's too loud. It's too loud, guys.
Well, speaking of some different tracks and scheduling wise, one of the biggest ones is this. I want to bring the chat back up to a level they'll be happy with. after talking about something I guarantee they don't like. But we'll talk about something they don't like in a good way in the sense that the Texas race, one lone race this season that is in the playoffs, is listed as a 400-mile race instead of 500 this September. So
yeah, somehow I missed that when looking through the initial thing, but yeah.
Thank God. Thank goodness.
Just a couple years ago, Texas had a total of 1,000 miles on the Cup schedule.
That's ridiculous.
Down to 400 just like that. I mean... Yeah. Can't say they don't deserve it, but how the mighty have fallen.
It's going to be really interesting to see what the reconfiguration does to the racing overall. So that'll be interesting to look at. A few other things here. We can roll through these pretty quick here. First off, Fox Sports will not have Vince Welch this season. He has left Fox Sports going into the year. And it went way under the radar that he's being replaced with Adam Alexander.
That should have been made a bigger deal. That's a much bigger deal than, like, no, there's,
he's
we're
not
making it out to be.
Adam Alexander is not Mike Joy, but he is still a very solid commentator.
Yeah. He's not like terrible.
I am sad to see Vince Welsh did not like him in the truck booth, but he's a great pit reporter.
Yeah.
Someone who makes the drivers comfortable. Everyone knows him. Mm-hmm. And so to see him go, it sounds like Fox is just going cheaper. I mean, they got like Josh Sims is his name. Dylan Welsh is with NBC. They have, I'm forgetting who else. There's a couple other folks at Fox that are pretty young, that have been doing a pretty good job. And I just think it's as simple as that. I mean,
cutting costs.
Vince Welsh has been around a long time, really experienced veteran, but you know, they got some new younger talent that they're ready to shine, I guess. Mm-hmm. Just the nature, unfortunately.
Looking at some of these others here, Hendrick Motorsports will be running the Xfinity 17 for four races in 2023. Andretti as a team is looking to get into NASCAR in the coming years.
Hey, Lord knows F1's trying to keep them out. That's a whole nother topic.
NASCAR's Euro Ice race that was looking to be run has been postponed indefinitely due to supply chain issues. Dang. Sucks to see.
That sucks.
But the NASCAR Garage 56 entry... That doesn't suck to see, as is Jimmy Johnson, Jenson Button, and Mike Rockenfeller are going to be driving that car with headlights. It has headlights.
Got the 7-time champion, and then you got a world F1 champion in that ride too.
Was anyone surprised? It sounds like a lot of folks were convinced Jeff Gordon was going to be one of the three drivers.
Yeah, I thought he was too.
Jeff ain't in shape anymore.
But like, I don't. Did he like? You wonder if that Indy race he ran last fall, if that was sort of like the moment of like, dang, like it's kind of sad. I don't mean to gloss over it. Yeah, but this is a legend of NASCAR who, a few months ago, maybe for the final time, realized, shoot, I just can't do this anymore, even if I wanted to. Like that's kind of sad. Like, respect to him for the career he's had, for the effort he's done put in with Hendrick Motorsports. Obviously, he's going to be a key figure
because
that's kind of sad.
That was real. That was really eye opening for him because, you know, growing up, he dominated those, you know, races back in the day, those USAC races. That's how, you know, that's how he, you know, first became Jeff Gordon.
I like Barry Boy Blast's comment in the chat. I'm not going to read it out loud, but he just says Jeff Gordon is growing into his sexy dad. I wasn't going to go that far. Jeff still looks really good, but
He works hard. He worked hard in his career, so he can eat whatever he wants.
Okay, let's get to the last bit here. Toyota.
We are not nutritionists.
No, we're not. Toyota is looking to expand its lineup in the Cup Series in 2024 and in the future from there.
What small team, because David Wilson was talking about like tier two or tier three teams that they're maybe talking. Mm-hmm. Which team do you think is most likely to switch to Toyota
next year? I don't know. Let me think about it.
Insightful. I'm torn between JTG and Front Row.
I was going to say JTG is my first guess, but I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
I'm going to go outside the box. BJ McLeod somehow gets the Toyota. Gosh.
They just switched to Chevys.
Oh, well, never mind then. No. JTG then. JTG.
Yeah, I'd go.
Chad seems to think JTG. That's
I'd go with JTG. They were with him before. I could see him going back.
Yeah, what about,
and bring back the chrome wheels if they go with them.
What about like, I don't know. What like Trackhouse? I doubt it. But what if a team like Trackhouse?
Trackhouse in a Toyota though.
We've seen good teams switch manufacturers. Like, SHR did it recently.
It's true.
Suarez will probably be sitting there like, oh crap, am I gonna lose my ride
again? Yeah, he's gonna lose his ride again.
Yeah, I think the JTG pick. Chat seems to agree. I think that's probably the best pick, but I think it's shot in the dark at this point. We don't know. Nothing may even come of this. It's all a guess.
All right, we got two things left. I want to roll through them real quick here. First off, fans like this at home if they're on a PC, because scanner frequencies will be available for free only on the PC. Anywhere else, you'll have to pay some kind of fee.
Yeah,
but
if you're
on a PC, you get to hear the scanner frequencies for free. And NASCAR's website will have the in-car cameras as well for every car again. And then lastly, when it comes to somebody who will need a lot of cameras on him, is Kyle Larson, who's going to be running the 2024 Indy 500 Coke 600 double. So that's going to be real fun to watch.
It's exciting.
With McLaren.
McLaren. Yeah. With McLaren.
I like that they gave themselves such a long runway. Obviously, I'd love to see him do it this year. I don't know if the schedule's already being announced, if it's possible to do both. But
that's smart. That's smart to announce it. Way
lots of time to prepare. It's crazy to me how much preparation goes into that one race. Well, weeks of testing and practice. Obviously, mm-hmm. tons of pre-prep, the months and years leading up to it. Like, and still, you'll see a team. You'll see a team. Like Fernando Alonso's a few years ago.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Entirely.
That was McLaren. That was with McLaren.
That was McLaren, yeah.
That was McLaren.
But that was the F1 side. I mean, because isn't this an Aero McLaren and the Hendrick entry that Larson's going to be running? I think Hendrick's involved, at least.
Oh, okay. Well, then that makes it a lot different. But also, McLaren, they have been in that situation before where they have, you know, one of the, you know, biggest names in motorsports come over and then he completely misses the race. So just take your time, prepare yourselves, get the car ready, you know.
I guess it's all the same group, I guess, right? Is it still Zach Brown?
Still Zach Brown. Yeah,
he's the head of all of it.
Yeah, he's the CEO. Yeah.
Yes, hopefully this goes better than whatever year that was. 19, I think?
No, 2020... Was it 19?
I think it was 19. Maybe.
Hold on. Let me look it up.
I thought it was before COVID. I don't remember.
Yeah, it might have been before COVid. Oh, yeah. 2019. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not the IndyCar guy.
But yeah, that was we had a big long off season. That was our big long lightning round.
Yes. And once again, that'll do it for this edition of the Lightning Round on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast.
Made me nervous for a second there, Darian.
You kind of went away from radio voice.
Tamper down.
You're on the edge there for a moment.
I'm on the edge of danger a little bit, but yeah, it'll take some getting used to.
Well, before we go on to the last couple topics before we get to our picks, I think we should thank one of our great sponsors who's returning, which is Lionel. For those of you who don't know, Lionel is the official diecast of NASCAR. You can pre-order your favorite driver's 2023 diecast now at lionelracing.com or any authorized Lionel retailer. And don't forget that you can also see the latest NASCAR Authentics wave at Walmart. And guys, we're going to change up this year because I'm the host and I want to on this one. I want to be the one that presents the diecast. And I got...
Scott Riggs?
That's Scott Riggs.
Valvoline.
2006. Nice Charger. That mean looking nose. That nose looks so mean back then. Yeah. I love it.
Won the All-Star Open that year.
Well, and he was right there. Was going to win the Coke 600.
Mm-hmm.
But this car, for me, has always been an all-time favorite. There's really no way you can mess up a Valvoline car, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It's one of the few unruinable ones. But what I love about this one, outside of the glistening paint, is the fact that you can't really see it. It's hard for it to zoom in. But there's actually the rubber wheels right here.
Yep. Oh, I love the old school ones. Yes, old school.
I love these so much. So
yeah,
this one, I saw it when I was cleaning out my closet over the off season. I'm like, why do I not have this die cast sitting out? So I get to show it to everybody. And again, that mean beautiful Dodge look. But yeah, thank you so much to Lionel for sponsoring the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. Again, this is 3 years now?
Yeah,
gosh, wow. Is it?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Wow.
But thank you to Lionel for sponsoring the show. And now let's move on to the last couple topics. This one, I am so interested in seeing what you guys think on it. So for those of you who do not know, Hendrick Motorsports is a pretty darn good team. I'll just say that. Well, Hendrick Motorsports is at 291 total wins this season. This is maybe a big topic towards the middle and end of the season. They're 9 away from 300. And looking at the last couple years, well, they've had 11 wins in 2022, so that would get them to the threshold. 17 wins in 2021, with 10 of those being from Larson. That'd get them over. Only 7 wins in 2020. So each of us has picked one of the four Hendrick drivers, and I want all of us to argue on their behalf of which one, if they hit 300 wins as an organization, who gets it. And you know what? Eric, start us off. with Kyle Larson on this one. Why does Kyle Larson get
Mr. Obvious
the 300th win for Hendrick Motorsports this year?
Well, I what I think is, you know, they need 9 wins to get there, so it's not going to happen probably in the first half of the season. But second half of the season, what happens then? The playoffs. And who's going to be very much in championship contention? I think as he's been, I know last year he was around a 12 exit, I suppose, but he was a contender up until that was mistakes were made at the Robo. Kyle Larson. So in 13 races over the last 2 years since joining Hendrick Motorsports, there's no reason to believe he and Cliff Daniels won't combine, won't work together to win at least 3 or 4 more races this season. I expect him to be in peak form towards the end of the year. Kyle Larson said last season the issues were mistakes. And I can think of a couple off the top of my head. Obviously, there are a couple of his wins. He still got into his teammate Chase Elliott. There was the mistakes at the Roval getting into the wall that damaged his car, prevented him from moving on. What would the heck happen at the Indy road course? Did he just lose focus? Did we ever figure out exactly what happened? He just destroyed Ty Dillon in one of the scariest wrecks I've seen in some time. Mm-hmm. So if he can cut back on the mistakes, which I think he will, Kyle Larson's going to be in contention late in the year, and that's when I think the 300th win is most likely to come.
Well, I'm going to go next on this list because I genuinely think this guy is going to be the one who gets win 300. And it's because of how good he has been overall with Hendrick Motorsports his whole career. And that is Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott has been just absolutely elite since coming to the Cup Series, especially since his first win. You know, I don't think Chase Elliott has ever finished outside the top 10 in points, ever.
He's been to 3 straight championship fours. Not to make your argument for you, but...
I mean, he is as elite as they come. And this win is probably going to come in the second half of the season. And if Hendrick Motorsports, especially if Alex Bowman does pretty well, especially if William Byron gets a couple wins like he did last year, it is very likely that this win comes in the last 14 to 15 races of the season. Well, there's a couple tracks in there that Chase Elliott is really, really good at. One of those, Watkins Glen. He is probably the best driver of the last 5 years at Watkins Glen. He's good at super speedways, Daytona and Talladega. You know, he didn't perform well in the playoffs last year at the Southern 500, but he's still pretty good at Darlington. If Hendrick's really good, I don't know if you guys have ever heard before, but he's from Georgia, so he could win in Atlanta. The Roval, that's in there. I mean, there's so many tracks that are specifically good for Chase Elliott, on top of him being, in my opinion, at the moment, the top driver, not only at Hendrick, but honestly, consistency-wise, when it comes to speed, I think he's the best driver in NASCAR right now. I don't see why Chase Elliott isn't the odds-on favorite to win 300.
The way I see it is you need 9 wins to get to win number 300. So you don't have to get the most victories to get there. I mean, all you have to do is just be there at the right place at the right time. And William Byron only has 4 career wins. And based on the poll, nobody is expecting him to sign at freaking 10%.
Change their minds, Darian.
I'll try my best. But with only 4 wins, this suggests to me that, hey, William Byron and Rudy Fugle, they are consistent. They still have some cooking left to do. They're not done. You know, their best days are still ahead of them. But statistically speaking, they do not win a whole lot of races. But it's all good because William Byron, of these four career wins, while 3 of them have came at the very, you know, at the very beginning of the season, there's only one, his first career win being at the 2020 regular season finale at Daytona International Speedway, which he won with Chad Knaus, I believe. Chad Knaus was his crew chief at the time. So, I mean, that does suggest that, yes, he can win later on in the season. So with all that consistency, you know, I think maybe he could eke out their 300th win. And maybe that would be William Byron's either his second or maybe his new career high 3rd win of the season. I could see him itching out getting a victory either at Daytona or sometime during the playoffs. Because I don't see Hendrick Motorsports being like super dominant to the point where they win 9 of the first 18 races. I don't see anything crazy like that happening. But with all the parity we saw last year, you know, Hendrick, they're so obviously going to have to fight for a lot of these victories. I think William Byron gets their 300th victory sometime, either during the playoffs or maybe during the regular season finale.
Oh boy, shocker. Who am I left to talk about? So I'm going to be talking about the 48 car of Alex Bowman. I put it like this. I only see him getting one win in the regular season, but I see Hendrick as a whole getting about 6 to 7, maybe 8 wins in the regular season combined. And that would mean that I expect that when this ninth win comes, that's win number 300, I think it's going to be in the playoffs. And there's a few tracks that stand out to me, especially in that first round. Fun fact about Alex Bowman, since coming to Hendrick Motorsports, he's never been eliminated in a round of 16. He's always at least made it past that first round. So I don't expect him to go out of that round, but a track on there is Kansas Speedway. This is a track that he finished second in the fall last year. He finished second in the spring of 2019. I think he ran really strong here back in 2020. He's had several good runs there. Darlington Raceway, he's had a few times, especially in 2020, where he ran very well, was contending for it. Bristol, not really one of his strong tracks. Texas, he's ran okay at. Talladega, anything's possible. But I'm particularly circling Kansas as probably being his best option to try to get win number 300 for Mr. H.
I like Denny Deliver's comment. He says, nah, Brandon Jones in a one-off fifth.
Well, I put up a poll when we started talking about this about 5 minutes ago.
Dude, nobody's picking Byron.
And no way. 41% have Chase Elliott. Shocker. 30% have Kyle Larson. 21% have Alex Bowman. And
9%.
Danny, how many accounts do you have?
8%. I keep logging in and out. And
gosh, that doesn't surprise me, though. I figured Chase Elliott and Larson would be the favorites for sure.
Well, that was a fun little swing. I think we have one more swing left in us here, though. A silly season swing. How about that?
Silly season swing.
There's been a couple. We could almost make this like a little nice little lightning round too with it, where we just like fast fire what we think of this stuff. Got, you know, Denny Hamlin, FedEx at 11 team. There's uncertainty there. So Here's a little backstory here. You know, you got the Kyle Busch M&M's drama that happened only a few months ago into last year. FedEx overall as a company is looking at cutting about $2 billion of their spending. So I ask this question on you. Whoever jumps at it first, go for it. Does FedEx drop JGR or lower their sponsorship of the 11 team? And what's that mean for Denny Hamlin?
You know what? Go ahead, Eric, because you're the Joe Gibbs guy.
I don't think their sponsor deal will change enough that it jeopardizes Hamlin's future. I mean, he said during, I think it was during media day, maybe it was during the awards banquet. I don't remember when it was, but it was in the last few weeks. He said that he doesn't anticipate any issues arising between him and Joe Gibbs Racing and also Toyota. He did say it may take some extra time, though, because he's got to negotiate with Toyota and stuff. There's 2311. Involved in whatever deal he signs next. And it's a weird time to be signing a deal if you're a driver with the new TV contract and potentially new media rights split coming in 2 years. Like I think Chase Briscoe talked about this. He just signed like a 3+ year deal. And he even said that there's a clause in there that like allows them to maybe rework some things if the media rights change things in 2025. So I think it's just going to be complicated. It's going to take some time. There's going to be some uncertainty there. As far as FedEx, because I saw the report that they're looking to cut $2 billion in costs. This sounds crazy, but a $15, $20 million sponsorship deal for Denny Hamlin, that's real money. But I think if you're looking to cut $2 billion and you're a logistics-based company like FedEx, that's more of like a structural change, like cutting back on trucks, making routes more efficient. That's something more like your actual business process that I think is going to need to change to knock that kind of money off.
Still 1% is still a pretty big cut of one.
It's big. I'm no business expert, but I feel like they've been tied to Denny Hamlin so long. It would be a big loss. I know M&M's was tied to Kyle Busch for a long time. Lowe's was tied to Jimmy Johnson. They both left, but this one just feels different to me. I would be surprised if they scale back in any significant way.
I won't bite on it, them staying until I hear it confirmed. Because I remember last year we started talking about it. I'm like, there's no way Kyle Busch and M&M's leave. And I'm just like, I'm still scarred by that.
I think the deal will be reduced. I don't think it'll be reduced by a whole lot. Maybe, you know, take some races out here and there. But I mean, it sounds like that, you know, they do want to save some money in the brand new deal. And sounds like publicly, you know, Denny Hamlin isn't too concerned. He's a driver who says what's on his mind usually for the most part. And whenever negotiations weren't going well for Kyle Busch, you knew it right away. Immediately. So I feel like if Denny Hamlin were in a similar situation, you would get a similar response. So him not going off and saying a whole lot of stuff makes me more hopeful that they'll get a deal done. And hey, if FedEx doesn't, you know, if they reduce their amount of races and stuff, I could see another sponsor coming in and, you know, taking up some of those races. But
go for it, Dan.
I was just going to say, here's an idea that's coming into my mind. You talk about someone coming in to fill the void. What if FedEx goes to 26 races instead of 36? Well, he's got a personal deal, but they could recruit it to be more of a full deal with Domino's. They could try to recruit them to come on board.
And also, too, don't forget, he has a bunch of sponsors with his other team, 2311. Maybe if they wanted to do a few races here and there, too. I mean, you can work
DoorDash. DoorDash or McDonald's, they may want more time.
Yeah,
Interstate Batteries is doing a race this year.
They got all four. They're sponsoring all four cars now, basically.
Now, another big story coming out is, does Truex retire this year? This one, I just want fast fire. Give me a quick explanation, yes or no. Does he retire?
I'm gonna say no. I feel like he's, you know, last year, you know, the way he performed and stuff, you know, set a fire in his belly and stuff. And also, too, he said that he still feels like he has a team that can win a lot of races. That was the most important comment to me. So if he feels he can still win, I don't think he goes anywhere for at least 2 to 3 years.
I agree. And this is a tough question to answer because I don't want to get into his personal life stuff.
Yeah, I didn't want to touch that. Yeah,
so, I don't know. Like, does that change his outlook on life to the point that he wants to race for a lot longer? Maybe this is now going to, like, I don't know how that's changed him psychologically or what his plans are. So it's tough to say. I think, like you said, Darian, I agree. That quote was kind of eye-opening, that he still believes he's got a great car and he'd be foolish to not
even after last season. Even after the way season went.
He was fifth in the regular season standings. They just didn't win a race. So I think he's going to have a good year this season. I think he comes back for another year.
Yeah, I'm with Eric on this one. You know, again, don't want to get into the personal details. If you know, you know. But I think that's going to affect it. I think he's going to stick around because of what's changed recently.
I'm going to be the contrarian here. I think he does. I mean, he's steadily been going down in performance. Yes, he did all right. Yes, of course he's going to say he can win. No, this team sucks. I hate racing for him. I can't wait to be fishing in Delaware. Like, of
you
course
mean
he's going to say that.
Not, every driver's not Kyle Busch and saying their team sucks?
he's worse. No, I the way you see how his performance even kind of trailed off the later the year went, and it almost seemed like he was kind of fatigued. And this has been a big question for a while now, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So even if he doesn't this year, I think the retirement's coming soon. I think he's over the hill when it comes to his peak. The best Martin Truex Jr. we saw from 2015 through about 2020. Like, he's never going to be that driver again. And the fact that he's so soon and so quick went winless and made dumb mistakes. I mean, the Homestead mistake, I don't think he makes that was, you know,
the sun
ago.
Was in his eyes.
Sun was in everyone's eyes. Truex was the only one that made the mistake. That's my thoughts. Like,
it is true.
I think this is his last year. I'll put that down on paper.
I don't know. I think there's a great chance he's going to try and race until the next TV contract. I don't know. He's only 42. I could see him going to 45. I don't know about much past that, but we'll just see. I don't know.
Yeah.
Now, another one here. We talked about Bowman earlier, maybe getting win 300. Does Bowman keep Ally? And what's the future of Alex Bowman look like, Danny?
Everyone goes with me. I think the Ally likes what they're getting with Alex Bowman. They're very active on his dirt team as well. It's not like they're just showing up to Hendrick and then saying goodbye, see you later. No, they're very active in all things Alex Bowman from what I've seen. They're very active in his pet charities, and I could see that being a big deciding factor of what happens with his contract. I think Ally is going to want to stick with Alex Bowman in the 48 car.
Do you like the day and night schemes they revealed, Danny?
I a lot of people online didn't like them. I love them. I especially like the night one. And I think it's going to look great under lights at Bristol and Nashville this year.
Yeah, I think Bowman, I think this one's a little more of a question mark because it sounds like Bowman wants to stay. Who wouldn't? To Hendrick Motorsports Car, yeah. You got full sponsorship. If Ally is still going to come back, maybe they don't sponsor every race, but if they're still a 20-plus, 30-plus race sponsor and they like Bowman, then yeah, it all hinges on what Ally wants. If Ally is thinking of leaving, scaling way back, if for some reason they actually want a different driver, then Bowman may be in trouble. But there's some pressure on this year. The crew chief.
Jimmy Johnson coming back does not help.
Yeah, there's always that. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Can we see Ally jump over? Well, from what I understand from the original deal, Ally has a B2B deal with Hendrix car dealerships. So that could play.
They do. They're huge in the auto industry.
So that might, that's why I think they'll probably stick around. I just don't know if they'll sponsor every race. And if they don't sponsor every race, do they get to say who goes in the car? If they're only sponsoring 15 races, does Hendrick get to decide?
Yeah.
And will they go with somebody else? I don't know. I think there's pressure on this year, but I think they'll stay.
The thing is, like, I put currently Alex Bowman above where we saw Casey Kane in his run because he's at least been, aside from 18, he's been good for at least one win a year. And I think if you're able to do that consistently, that goes a long way, especially with this sport and this team.
It's tough because he's made the playoffs every year so far.
Yeah.
And I think with Blake Harris, I think most people would probably pick him to make the playoffs this year. So until he has just a flop of a season, it'd be hard pressed to, you know, put someone else on that car, you know?
Yeah. And especially after, you know, they've been doing all the sponsoring for events for him outside of NASCAR too. I mean, it'd be totally different if they weren't doing that as well. But go ahead.
I was going to say, and Parker brings up a good point in the chat, Blake Harris going over there, that could potentially elevate the 48.
Yeah, so I feel like the best thing Bowman needs to do is just strictly focus on the, you know, on-track performance. Obviously, you know, the whole contract situation, it's a big deal, but I mean, you can only control what you can control. And if Alex Bowman can improve with Blake Harris as his crew chief performance-wise, then yeah, Ally will certainly love to ink out a brand new deal with them.
It all depends on if Bowman. I think if Bowman comes back and has a resurgence, which I personally think he will. I'm not saying I don't think he's going to become, you know, the reincarnation of Jimmy Johnson, but it's not out of the question with an aggressive crew chief like Blake Harris, with as good as the Hendrick cars are and the nose changes that may make the Chevys even faster. Like, I don't see any reason why he shouldn't perform. I'll put it like that. Like, if Alex Bowman does not make it to the round of 12, like he does every year, he makes the postseason.
Goodbye.
I don't think there's an excuse. I think he is a good enough driver to do so. He has a good enough situation around him. And it's, I think, only been improved by Blake Harris going in there. Mm-hmm. So I just
hope he stays healthy. I hope that's my big thing.
That's right. I almost forgot about that.
I think that Ally and Bowman will stick around, and, you know, and it might be another year too. I mean, Hendrick's been signing sponsors for longer term deals than a lot of other teams have. So that's big. Now jumping over.
You can't ditch a top 75 driver in NASCAR history. Did y'all see The Athletic? Their top 75. They had a big panel. Bowman's number 75 on the list. And if you look at the numbers,
it makes sense. He's around there, yes.
Yeah, he's around
there. But are we just counting Cup, or are we counting all series?
Just talking Cup is what the list was.
He's tracking very well. And this comes from, you know, admittedly a fan of him. He's tracking very well. I wouldn't put him that high, though.
Yeah.
But he has 7 wins, I think, and there's not many other drivers.
Damn,
that
even
have
the
that
freaking
high.
Alex Bowman fanatic didn't want to put him that high.
So, well, so, we talk. Getting back on track, we talked about one Chevy team. Let's talk about the other Chevy team that has questions up in the air. Does Trackhouse re-sign both Chastain and Daniel Suarez going in through this year?
100%.
I'm going to go with a hot take. No. They're going to lose one of them.
Ooh.
They're going to lose one of them. Either,
which one?
Either, I don't know. It depends. I mean, if they want to go cheaper, you know, obviously, you know, Daniel Suarez, or if they want to, you know, re-sign Ross Chastain, and maybe, you know, maybe there's another prospect they want to bring up or something like that too. Then unfortunately Suarez would get the raw end of the deal, something like that. So I feel like only one of them will end up returning in 2024.
So I will counter Darian here, because Ross Chastain literally just almost won the championship. I don't see them wanting to get away from him. And side note, I mean, Daniel Suarez, you know, that was their first guy. I don't see them wanting to just say
it's a cutthroat, though.
I don't see them being ready to part just like that. Also, from Daniel Suarez, I'm going to try to find a way to make it not go down like that, because this is the longest team he's ever been with, and he's only been with them now for.
This is his third year. He's going.
This is his third year.
But also, too, remember, hey, you know, there are other teams that are looking at Chastain, like, hey, like,
well, what if they expand?
What's your price?
Yeah, but they expand, especially they could, with they could the TV
expand
deals.
Too. Yeah, they could expand too. Yeah.
Here's my only concern. I think both will stay with Trackhouse. My only concern when it comes to Chastain is he did just make the Championship Four, went viral. Number one top play on SportsCenter, second in points.
My point is his
price just went up. Like he was a bargain. I bet you last year he was not a top 20, maybe top 20, but he was not a top 10, top 15 paid driver. He might have not even been top 20 paid, highest paid driver last year. I think he's going to expect to be at least top 15, top 10. And I don't know, the Trackhouse might have to move some things around, but I think they'll get a deal done. I think there's mutual interest. Where else is Chastain going to go? Stuart Haas?
I mean, if the 48 does open.
If the 48 opens.
Yeah, there's a lot of scenarios here. There's a lot more scenarios.
It's a very long shot.
I think a Hendrick car or arguably a Gibbs car is the only car I would rather be in than a Trackhouse car.
What if Truex retires?
I think they stay.
Gibbs
pays well. They pay their drivers well, unless your name is, you know, Kyle Busch and he's a sponsor, or Matt Kenseth and you're 45 years old, but they usually pay your drivers what their drivers want. So that's my only concern with Chastain. With Suarez, and not to plug this, but I actually got to talk to Daniel Suarez earlier this week for a project I'll be releasing in the next week or two, and this kind of came up, and you know, he didn't specifically answer, you know, oh yes, you know, we're working on a contract, working on an extension, but he did call Trackhouse family, and it's a place he sees himself for a long, long time. So we know Suarez wants to stay. I think Trackhouse, they built this team up around him. Some of the sponsors initially were tied closely to Daniel Suarez. I think if the results are similar to what he did last year, if he can improve especially, I think Trackhouse will be quick to sign him to an extension. But the fact that he only got a one-year extension
That's what I'm saying.
It seems weird that they'd leave the door open at all to letting Suarez
like,
go when he was their anchor driver initially.
Like you just mentioned, I mean, like he says the team is family, but I mean, only a one-year extension though? For the guy who, you know, helped you, you know, start the team and stuff, your first ever driver, you know, like, I don't know. I figured there'd be some more loyalty there, but,
I asked the chat who they thought that would, be kept by Trackhouse, and it was both 83%, Chastain 10, Suarez 4, neither 4. So, yeah, and the poll on that one. Now, last one, and this one I do want to do just rapid fire. You can give me an explanation if you want. If not, you know, go for it. If you have to give an explanation, definitely go for it on that one. Who replaces Harvick?
Ooh.
So I think in a perfect world, Zane Smith. I don't know if they'll be able to get him from Front Row. He is a Ford driver. Off the top of my head, my first guess is John Hunter Nemechek. That's my first guess.
This answer is going to piss off some fans because I know what you're doing. The easiest person to me in that situation would be Cole Custer, right? Like, depending on how he does in the Xfinity Series this year, he already has family ties within the team. So would you look for another outside guy, or do you want to keep promoting within the team? I could see Cole Custer getting back in the Cup Series next season. I could totally see that.
So, I just that seems like the most obvious, man. But
yeah, that I, did it. Yeah.
What about Riley Herbst?
Riley Freese.
Sorry, I've heard Ryan Freese over and over.
Long off season.
What about Riley Herbst?
I can see that.
He's
too.
Got sponsorship.
Brings in the money. Yeah, Brings in the money.
Yeah, and I would have said no chance that they give him a cup deal just because of that monster money, but JGR just gave Joe Graff a part-time deal in Xfinity. I didn't think that was ever going to happen. Mm-hmm. So there's no telling how far money can take you.
And Monster is in that pipeline between him and Haley Deegan with Ford.
Yeah. So and he's a Kevin Harvick client, a Kevin Harvick Incorporated client. There's that going for him.
Now, oh, go ahead.
Okay, go for it, Danny.
Yeah, I think Ryan Preece is my pick. Yeah, he's going to the 41 this year, but I kind of thought that would just be like a one-time deal. Hunt Brothers Pizza basically seems like they're good to come with him. Bush, probably, if they want to stick with SHR.
He's got United Rentals as a supporter as well.
Yeah, so he's got so many of those partners already kind of okay with him. I could see them just transferring him into the 4 team. Then the 41s open up, and maybe that's where he bring a Riley Herbst in it. By putting him in that 41 car, that takes away Haas's need to invest into that car as much.
True. I look at it like, I just think it'd be crazy. So in Xfinity this year, Custer and Herbst will be full-time. Yes. We all know Custer's going to blow Herbst out of the water. Like, we know he is. No disrespect to Herbst. I think Herbst wins a race this year. I do think Riley Herbst will win a race this year. But Custer's going to win 5. And just, can you imagine after that?
I think I'll win more.
After that kind of season, if they... with a Herbst in that's cup a, over Custer.
I mean, Custer did have a similar kind of season that you're describing before he went to cup, and it didn't exactly go well.
I know. Well, he won Rookie of the Year his first year.
He's the last winner at Kentucky Speedway.
Got a trophy.
The 550 package.
That man only has one career top five.
Man just had to hold it down. That's all he had to do. He basically won a mini plate. He basically won Atlanta before Atlanta was Atlanta.
Oh my gosh. All right, that was fun.
Yeah, that was. But I think we got one more little group to thank before we get to picks.
Yes, we do. We've made it to our Clash at the Coliseum picks, but before we can do that, we did not forget about these beautiful partners. But Forney Industries is back once again. Forney offers a full line of welding and plasma cutting machines, metalworking accessories, and more. If you're a do-it-yourselfer or a professional metalworker, Forney has everything you need for your next project. So check them out at forneyind.com. Y'all are familiar with the link at this point. If you've been watching for any amount of time, Jarrett's got it down in the description. Or look for their green Forney logo at an authorized Forney dealer near you. I was actually at Ace Hardware the other day, and they had some Forney stuff out on display when I first walked in. I was stoked. I was like, oh my gosh, it's as seen on the NASCAR Weekly the podcast. We need to get that on the box somewhere.
Yeah, we need to get that sponsor. Like
just like that big.
Yeah, a little tiny one, little itty bitty spot.
Like the end of the commercials when they're talking about something like this, you know, like that. Yeah.
Side effects may include
death.
No, no, it does not.
Becoming a hardcore NASCAR fan and watching four men talk about NASCAR on a Zoom call for
You don't get those side effects watching this podcast or listening to this podcast.
Thank you to Forney Industries, Jarrett. I don't know where we're starting. I don't know where we're starting with the Clash, but yeah, the Clash is this weekend.
We got some Clash talk here.
First race preview of the season.
Race preview. First race picks, which we'll talk a little more in depth about that in a moment. But let's go right into some of these details for this weekend. It is the Busch Clash at the Coliseum, 150 laps, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Big Fox and MRN. Weather, according to AccuWeather, is looking to be 64 degrees and cloudy with a 25% chance at rain.
We got rain tires, though.
Yes, yeah, we do.
I'm gonna worry about that. Nope, worries.
A couple of big storylines to look at through this one. Different tidbits about it, whatever. It's a big, different event. Now, Joey Logano is your defending winner, but this year, in light of the history of the Coliseum, first, second, and third will win a gold, then silver, and bronze medals for this race. It's not something that's going into every race. It's not a participation
trophy.
It's
for fun!
Some of y'all was really getting mad about that. This is an F1.
There is that. There will be 27 entries on the quarter-mile track for the main. Tony Stewart is going to be in the booth. Rob Lowe is going to be in as the Grand Marshal, because Rob Lowe is in everything nowadays. Yeah. And there will be concerts and musical acts from those like Wiz Khalifa, Dixie D'Amelio, and Cypress Hill.
Eric, right, Eric? You know who that is, Eric?
Who, Dixie D'Amelio?
It's the Daytona 500 500 laps.
I just found it even funnier.
Wasn't she at the Coliseum last year?
Yeah, her and her sister were.
Yeah.
They, that's what I'm saying. They asked if the 500 was 500 laps.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, hey, everyone's got to start somewhere. I've heard worse questions.
But before, you know, before we get into who we're going to pick this week, I say we go to Darian's betting odds. And I say we jump something else on screen for you guys really quick. That way you can see what Darian's talking about here.
Brand new, yes, yes. Welcome back to the betting odds on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. Let's go with the race favorites for the 2023 Clash at the Coliseum. Joey Logano and Chase Elliott are both tied at plus seven. At plus 750. Both of them tied to win the race. In third place is Kyle Larson at plus 800, as well as Christopher Bell. And then finally, rounding out the top five is Kyle Busch at plus 900. As for the best of the rest, Ryan Blaney and Denny Hamlin are both plus 1,000, as well as Ross Chastain and William Byron being plus 1,200. And finally, Tyler Reddick at plus 1,500. As for the underdogs, We are messing up the drivers' names tonight so hard, bro. Oh my gosh.
Harvick. He's only got 1 year left, man.
Kevin Harvick at plus 2,000. Martin Truex Jr. at plus 2,500. Alex Bowman plus 3,000. Eric Jones plus 4,000. And finally, my personal favorite, Justin Haley at plus 10,000.
Kevin in the chat says, give me Haley just for the hell of it.
I love the face, by the way.
I had to find a way to incorporate it. I had to.
Yeah. I love it. You're going to see that beautiful face all season long, folks, for the betting odds.
Well, I'm sorry.
I'm laughing at Ross Chastain.
What? I'm like trying to look and see what.
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, let's keep moving here. Looking forward. We will talk about the NASCAR Weekly Podcast Fantasy League soon. No points racing. It's not going to be up. But we do have picks of our own and pick points and all that. And I thought I'd jump something else on you guys as well here. When it comes to the picks, this is how it's done. Okay. I've seen a lot of people get a little confused by it, and I understand why. Yeah. So here is the way that points are awarded for each series. You know, 10 to first for the Cup Series, then down in increments of 2 to 5th. Mostly we'll only have 5, you know, between the 4 of us in the chat. If you pick the winner correctly, you get 5 bonus points. Then 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 for Xfinity and the Truck Series with 3 bonus points if you pick the winner right for Xfinity and 1 for the Truck Series. If you sweep the weekend, you get an extra 10 all on top of that. And then when we have the SRX, that'll be 4 more. So there's that for you right there. So basically, you can keep us honest during the season. We'll mm-hmm. post it up during different points of the season. You guys keep us honest. If I did the math wrong or if somebody is doing really well, just tell us about that. And yes, I will be able to tell if you're lying and saying the chat deserves more points.
Love guys, the graphics, by the way. Love the new graphics.
Thank you. Ned, I appreciate that. Well, let's get into it, though. Who are our picks for this weekend? Let's go in the order of the way the hosts finish and chat. You guys get the last finish again, or last pick again on it. So starting with Eric, who is your pick to suck in the Clash?
Gosh, second place 2 years in a row. I lost to Jarrett in 21 and chat. It went down to the wire, but y'all got me last season.
Damn, Martin.
Yeah. This year I'm gonna go from bridesmaid to the bride, right? Something like that. I was gonna say I'll wear a wedding dress if I win this thing.
I'm not gonna make that promise.
I'll wear a veil or something. I'll wear just a white t-shirt.
That sounds cheaper.
That's a lot better. Yeah, absolutely. But I guess I get to go first again this year. That's my mm-hmm. honor.
Yep.
So suck pick. So here's my theme for the Clash. I think you got to be a little mean to win the Clash. Mm-hmm. And there's some really polite drivers that were just afterthoughts last year. Remember, Keselowski didn't even make the show. Martin Truex Jr. I think he's my suck pick. I think he's going to have a good year this season. but the clash does not suit someone as polite and gentlemanly as Martin Truex Jr. The dude literally had a fire suit with a bow tie on it a couple of years back.
Yeah.
This race just isn't built for someone.
Nobody is scared of you, bro. Nobody's scared of you.
Well, I'm going to go with the guy who you had just mentioned, Brad Keselowski. I think that he's going to have a better season than last year, but it sure as hell is not going to start with the clash, at least in my opinion. Now watch, I say that he's going to win. But yeah, so next up.
Damn. So you said Brad Keselowski, and I'm thinking similar note, but it's a guy who's in his former car. I was at this race last year, and I can recall Austin Cindric getting into a lot of people's ways, bumping them, spinning a few times. And I'm going to put Austin Cindric as my suck pick for this one.
Hey, like Eric basically mentioned, a good guy has finished last basically in this race, it seems like. You got to be mean. You got to be one of a mean old SOB to even have a shot at winning this race. And Eric Almirola is one of the nicest guys in the entire garage area, so I will go with Eric Almirola. And also to remember, I believe he was the first to DNF in one of the heat races, if I'm not mistaken.
Sounds right. I remember he was in the wall at one
point. DNF'd. He DNF'd in one of the races, in his heat race. Yeah, he DNF'd.
So, well, you're going with the chat because they have unanimously chosen him.
And they're going to pick him every single time
A little surprised no one mentioned Ty Dillon.
He won, but then he got DQ'd, right?
He was too aggressive. He was too mean.
I'm just thinking Ty Dillon in the Spire car is like low-hanging fruit this year.
Yeah.
Well, the chat's taking Almirola. Yep.
Let's go to a little higher-hanging fruit on this one with our dark horse pick.
I'm going to go Justin Haley until he got KO'd by Kyle Larson. I think he was in wasn't he running like fifth when that happened in the main event?
I think he won one of the heats.
Yeah. So I think Justin Haley is a solid dark horse pick for this one.
Yeah, I was actually going to go with Justin Haley as well. So we pretty much explained where I was going with. No, it's fine. It's fine. You explained where I was going with it.
3 for 3. Justin Haley for me as well as my underdog.
Well, I'm not going to pick Justin Haley. I'm going to pick another driver who is with Stuart Haas Racing, Ryan Preece, because remember, he won one of the heat races last year
in a Rick Ware racing car.
Yes, if anybody can make the main show, it's clearly him, Ryan Preece, my underdog.
And like while there were some from others, it's looking like 43, Eric Jones has been the big one. There might be Noah Gregson
I'm saying a little bit more 42, actually.
That's a repeat from I
think you gotta go Jones, a couple almond dingers just snuck in.
I mean, I'll put up a poll for it as we go to the
poll?
Win pick.
Answer me, poll.
I'm seeing a few more Gregsons now, so I'd at least put Gregson in there. 42 in there.
Basically they're leaning towards Legacy Motorsports either way.
Motor Club, Danny.
Oh, Club. The Club. Oh. The Club.
I just be happy I don't call it Jimmy Johnson Racing.
All right. While they're voting on that, and we can also see the responses in the chat itself, who Darian is going to be?
Oh, yes. It has been so long. But, fellas, I got one question for y'all. Who's going to win? Who's gonna win the clash this weekend?
Radio voice made it for about half a show.
Yeah.
We gotta work on it.
I'm gonna put a rev limiter on your mic.
Someone in the chat, or it might have been Denny Deliver, said Darian needs a muffler. sounds a little barbaric in my opinion.
Oh god.
Okay, so I guess I gotta go first. Win pick.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Like I said, you got to have a little edge to you if you're going to win the clash. I mean, Joey Logano won it last year. We know he's not afraid to knock somebody out of the way, but I'm going to go with the guy who went wheel to wheel with him in the closing lap, someone who we know is motivated to prove all the doubters wrong this season, still in his prime, Kyle Busch. And don't forget this, the 8 car that he's driving this year was dominating this race until it broke. So
that's true.
I feel pretty good about Kyle Busch's chances of starting the year off strong and winning the clash.
But it did break.
Yeah.
Well, by the way,
and also he led the most laps too.
By the way, letting you know now, the 43 won far and away. It was like 61 to 39, 60 to 40.
That was easy.
And, For me, I am going to go with a driver who I think is going to have a huge year, a really big year. This guy had made a pretty big change in his career. Probably one of the biggest the sport's seen in a while, especially for a driver his caliber. I think with a new manufacturer, too, it's going to be really interesting to see how he does. That team itself had been getting better as the year went on last year. And he performed really fast in the Clash last year. We just talked about him. Tyler Reddick.
Hey, he led 51 laps before the car broke. And it was 51 of the first 53.
I was trying to parallel. It's amazing how much him and Kyle Busch parallel each other if you just think of it from certain ways.
That's crazy. I mean, Kyle Busch, he led 64 laps in this race last year, and Tyler Reddick 51. So they had two of the most laps led. So they can win here.
Last year for this race, I picked a guy who ended up not even being in the final show. That's not going to happen to me this year, I think, because I'm picking a teammate of that person. I'm picking a California kid. He was fast here last year until he got preoccupied being angry at Justin Haley. I'm picking Kyle Larson to win the Clash this year.
So there were only three drivers to lead any sort of laps in last year's race. You had Tyler Reddick with 51, Kyle Busch with 64, but the third one happened to be the winner as well. I think Joey Logano will win 2 years. He'll win this race 2 years in a row. He has all the momentum coming off of a second championship. Full set of hair, looking good. And he has a thing for winning these exhibition races left and right here. So I think he'll make it a two seasons in a row as the Clash winner, Joey Logano.
So looking at the chat, there's a lot of eights, but there's a lot of repeats too. So it's hard to tell.
I've been, there's repeats, but it's been majority eight. And I'm wondering here, are they really this confident about Kyle Busch, or do they just want to follow Eric?
Guys, it's a new season.
It's a new season, y'all. You don't have to do that anymore. But I guess they want to start off right away. But
they're guaranteeing they won't be behind.
I'm seeing a bunch of eights, probably,
after this week.
Yeah, we're going to go eight on this one. So Kyle Busch is their pick. That's funny because Kyle Busch was my pick last year. So Kyle Busch. So outside of Eric in the chat, we all picked differently this time.
Wow. Interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Chat's going to pick the same as Eric all year.
Who in the chat's going to be at the Clash? Because I'll be there this year. I need to know who else is going to be vibing because I'm excited. I'm really excited to see if the atmosphere lives up to the hype of year one. I thought last year's race, I thought the crowd was pretty great, especially by the main event. Mm. I was pleasantly surprised by the renovations and the venue. I thought it was great. So I'm excited for this year.
Reminder. Don't get there too early because there was nothing to do for a while.
That's right. Yeah. I'll have to watch. It's a night race this time too. The main event's going to start as the sun sets, which I'm really excited about. So I think that's going to help the atmosphere quite a bit. Well, I forgot the chat's so delayed, but I'll be watching. You can move on, Jared.
Well,
Black Hat's going to be there. Yes. Nice. GN is going to be there. Great.
Yeah. But I think that's
a good first episode. Yeah, we had a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah.
No, we got in under 2.5 hours. One final poll to end the evening. Yeah.
We'll have a poll. Everybody is having some fun as we jump on out. But you know what? I think everybody has seen where we're going to be next week. But I'm going to say it again. They've seen we're going to be the next 10 weeks. It's going to be real fun.
Listening audience doesn't know. They got to know.
Yeah, yes, true. Exactly. So next week, Wednesday night, February 8th at 8 p.m. Eastern time, we are going to be on this man's channel, Danny B Talks, for, well, a lot of stuff. We're going over the Busch Clash. We're going to be talking about Speed Week, so that's going to be coming up right after we have a little Super Bowl bye week. And we're going to be giving our 2023 Daytona 500 poll pick predictions. Mm. And on top of all that, we have all of our picks for the NASCAR playoffs, and trust me, there are going to be some fans who are very happy and very displeased, and it's just going to be a ton of fun to talk about. So 8 p.m. Eastern time next week, on this day, a Wednesday night, on Danny B Talks channel. Gonna be really fun, and we cannot wait to see you there. But guys, the logos are off the screen, the ticker is done.
Damn, first shows in the books. Season six. Season six.
One down, 40 episodes to go.
Yeah, I can't believe y'all keep showing up to listen/watch.
Yeah.
Power, appreciate it. We got over 700 tonight.
slash yeah. also watch for us to embarrass ourselves and make memes out of us.
Yes,
yeah. Exactly. Somebody already sent me a photo of my face photoshopped onto a wedding dress.
Now, so we already have one meme. What did Jared say earlier? Who Riley Priest?
Riley Priest.
There you go. So Riley Priest, another brand new meme we can use all season. So just the first of many we'll have this.
First of many. Well, guys, I think that about wraps it up. Let's get on out of here. I can show you whatever meme I was supposed to show you later, but later. See you guys. Have a good night.
Goodbye. See you on my channel.
Steve, you look beautiful. You look great.